And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It's Tuesday, last day of April, April 30th, 2013. I'm Doug Hagman. Co-host with me is my son, Joe Hagman. Together, we are the Hagman and Hagman Report, the premier father-son investigative internet team on the internet. You're listening to the only show, folks, where the news is presented to you in three dimensions. We look beyond the headlines, bylines, and bring you the news behind the news. We want to welcome our new listeners in Mississauga, Ontario, Canada. Heard from them today, as well as new listeners in Rutland, Vermont, Newburgh, Kentucky, and Plano, Texas. I want to welcome each and every one of you listeners aboard. I want to thank you for joining us. Thank you for your belief and trust in us as we walk through this minefield of current events together. And of course, if you're new to this program, we broadcast each and every weeknight from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. You can find us on the internet at homelandsecurityus.com. That's our home base. We're also simulcast by the Christians United Broadcasting Network. You can tune into us there at the Hagman and Hagman Report.com. Joe, it's good to be with you today, and we got a lot of news to go over today and talk about. A lot of interesting stuff.
Yes, we do. And for those of you wondering about my dad and how they liked how spunky you were last night and how fired up you were, I hope he can stay as fired up as he was last night. Unfortunately, after 4 hours in a dentist's office and 3 root canals later, I'm not sure if he'll be able to get up. But I hope your mouth does feel better, and I know you're in a lot of pain and you have an infection. So
yeah, yeah.
Keep him in your prayers as his mouth continues to give him trouble.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of it's the mystery of a moving infection, and it's the equivalent of root canal. Long story. Anyway, that's not the issue. Yeah, you know what? I'm fired up tonight. We've got information to get into. There's a lot of things that are diverting our attention. I was on Coast to Coast at 1 o'clock this morning for the news segment, and the topic of conversation was, why do the American people fear the government more than terrorists? And I really thought that was really a kind of a waste of time to comment about, but nonetheless I did, and of course we'll talk about that during the course of the program today. What else we have, Joe?
Well, we have a whole bunch of things that we're going to get into tonight. We have a athlete who came out of the closet, the first professional athlete to do so, coming out as homosexuality. We're going to get the story on that and the reaction. Also, we have tonight we're going to be covering a little bit on what is happening in Syria. There's another blast in Damascus in the second day in a row. We had an explosion there, and yesterday also they fired rockets at a Russian passenger jet. We have more details on that. We're going to get into Obama blasting the internet media, saying he hates internet news media. Why does he say that? We're going to talk about that, and also the Obama administration threatening, intimidating Benghazi whistleblowers. What is the cause? Why? We have some news and information on that as well.
You know, before we get into that, one of the things I want to mention is something I've been working on here, and that's about gold and silver and trying to track the prices down, trying to track where things are headed. Obviously, we're headed for an economic collapse. I'm going to just take a few minutes just to point out that, the one time in really the last year of the life of Jesus Christ, he used physical force to throw the money changers out of the temple. This is the only time during his life in his ministry, of his ministry, which he used a physical force against anyone. When the Jews came to Jerusalem to pay their temple tax, they could only pay it with a special coin, which was the half shekel. And this was a half ounce of pure silver, and about the size of a quarter today, an American quarter today. It was the only coin at the time, which was pure silver and of an assured weight without the image of a pagan emperor. And therefore, to the Jews, it was the only coin acceptable to God. Well, you know, unfortunately, these coins were not very plentiful at the time. The money changers had cornered the market on them. So they raised the price of them to whatever the market could bear, and they used their monopoly they had on these coins to make this just tremendous profits. And they forced the Jews to pay whatever these money changers demanded. Well, that's the story of Jesus and the temple, and he threw the money changers out as their monopoly on these coins totally violated the sanctity of the So, Joe, are you there?
Yeah, if you can hear me, I don't know if you want to switch off as host. We can go to one of these audio clips if you want to.
I don't know what you mean. I don't know what you mean, switch off as host.
We can have either Troy call in as host, or we can use the landline to call in as host and call in ourselves separately. I don't know what Skype, the deal is with Skype, but it dropped off a second time. And I'm not losing an internet connection, so I don't understand why they're booting a call. It seems like Blog Talk is hanging up the phone and then picking it back up.
All right. How much of this went out, if I can ask?
The beginning, yeah. Everything went good until we heard the drop-off sound.
I didn't hear any drop-off sound.
Okay, well, that was I jumped in right away.
Okay.
And it was when you heard me yelling, so...
But here's what I want to get into, folks, before we get into the news. I mean, can we leave things the way they are right now, or do we have to do some gymnastics to get over this crap that we're going through?
I don't know. Apparently, it was fine. I don't understand. Like I said, the internet connection's good. I never lost internet. It just kicked us off the call. It's the second time I did that.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. If this does happen again, we'll deal with it, and we'll deal with it strongly. And I, my apologies again to the listeners. You know, we do know, and I was told, and I'm not sure if I went over this last night or not. There is a, and I've got this on good authority, excellent authority for my intelligent context, that there's an active, high professional, very precisely targeted disinformation campaign and a campaign to take people like us off the air. But the disinformation campaign is to bog the real data, the real information behind it. For example, the Boston Marathon bombings. And this is not a program that's run by kids in their moms' basements, but true professionals. It's directed at active it's directed at people like, for example, Alex Jones. It's directed at people like us. It's directed at people like Rick Wiles. It's directed at people, the number of people, the different people it's directed to is just incredible. So I want people to understand that, and I reference this too in my article, that Bad Moon Over America, that was just posted yesterday at HomelandSecurityUS.com and FreePress.com. In fact, when we first came on, we were talking about my parents last night on Coast, and we were talking about the government, and there were people not believing, not trusting, and fearing the government more than terrorists. Well, I think the poll tells us something very important. More Americans are finally waking up to the fact that we are being played. We are being played by professionals. We're being lied to, and it's not just one lie, but a pattern of lies. And it's just not by one government agency. but by all agencies of the government. We have a long history of not getting the truth, not getting straight answers from Kennedy, the assassination of Kennedy, from the Gulf of Tonkin, from Waco, from Oklahoma City, 9/11, Benghazi, and now Boston. And see, therein lies the mistrust. It's not terrorism now with bombs, but it's also terrorism with the economy, terrorism with this police state that's being rolled out by our government. And once again, I just want to reiterate this, that I've got an excellent authority from my intelligence contacts that there's an active, highly professional, very precisely targeted disinformation campaign against the very people like us who have the real information, for example, behind the Boston Marathon bombings. Folks, if you get emails with pictures and outrageous claims, for example, there was a claim about the killed principal, Sandy Hook principal, being at the Boston Marathon. These are situations that are being done to discredit the very people who are wanting to bring the truth to you. Please be very use your discernment before forwarding this information like this. And which brings me back to, like, for example, getting cut off and having these audio problems. It's interesting because, we have a redundancy built in. We have a number of things that we do. And it's interesting how we're being cut off and treated. And I just want to...
Yeah, if it's not one tactic, it's another. If it's not distortion, then it's, cutting off. If it's not cutting off, then it's... distortion, and if it's neither, then they'll just not let you get in, or chop it up. It's just amazing. And when you connect from, five different places through three different countries, it gets a little old. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, we're not broadcasting from our grandmother's basements here, okay? We've got thousands of dollars invested in equipment. And there is an issue here, and I just want to let you know that we will overcome, and we want to thank you for your patience. But we understand listener fatigue sets in, especially when it's distorted or when the calls drop, and it's just crazy. By the way, Joe, I didn't tell you this, and before speaking about the economy, and what really got me on in pursuit of this is I talked to Steve Quayle early this morning, and we're doing a program with the Guerrilla Economist with his financial insider. The date and time to be announced yet. So I think it's going to be a good show. That'll be coming up probably within the next week or so. And then tomorrow.
I'm excited about tomorrow.
Tomorrow Nathan Liat will be on our program too. Regular time for tomorrow, right?
Yep.
The whole show. So.
Yep, right time 8 to 11 with Nathan Leal tomorrow. I'm not going to want to miss that.
Yeah, exactly. But just really quickly, I just want to finish up with what I was saying here. As I mentioned, it was in 30 AD when Jesus really used physical force to throw out the money changers out of the temple. And I'm assuming that people heard this story. And it was over the half shekel, the half ounce coin of pure silver. The size of an American quarter right now is the only coin that made of pure silver, guaranteed weight without the image of a pagan emperor on it, and therefore it was the only coin acceptable to Jews, or acceptable by Jews that was considered acceptable to God. But let's fast forward to where we are now. Well, with a brief stop. I just want to briefly stop here at 1787. I just want to say this really quick, and then we can get into what you're going to say. But the colonial leaders assembled in Philadelphia to report the Articles of Confederation to the Constitution. And it was during this time when there was an issue about the money. It was said in a letter to James Madison dated July 2nd, of 1787 from Governor Morris, who actually headed the final draft of the U.S. Constitution, who knew of the motivation of the central bankers because he had once worked for them, Governor Morris, along with his former boss, Robert Alexander Hamilton. Anyway, they were trying to get a central bank in place, but nonetheless, In a letter, James Madison said, wrote, or Robert Morris, in a letter to James Madison, wrote this: "The rich will strive to establish their dominion and enslave the rest. They always did. They always will. They will have the same effect here as elsewhere. If we not, by the power of our government, keep them in their proper spheres." And isn't it interesting, the James Madison as opposed to Ponsky. And Thomas Jefferson wrote against it as well. Jefferson made this statement: "If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations which grew up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered." And this is what we're about to see, ladies and gentlemen. This is why I wrote, among other things, the article about killing the dollar. And if you haven't read that article, "We're just here to kill the dollar." This Obama administration is going to just kill the dollar. Well, in favor of what? And how does this make sense? And this leads to some news of gold and silver that we can get into as the program unfolds.
All right, folks, I'm back, and thank you for your patience once again. You know, it's just an amazing situation, and we're the only program, I think, that you just never know what's going to happen. You just never know what you're going to get when you tune in. And we understand about listener fatigue. We understand completely about listener fatigue, and we don't want that to. We certainly don't want to be. We certainly don't want to lose you as listeners, and we understand the problem. We're working on the problems. We're fighting against some pretty formidable situations. You must understand that. Now, that said, here, I'm not sure. I'm going to open up my chat feature. Just hang with me, folks, and those listening by on the archive, please bear with me. I'm going to open up my chat feature and ask if you can hear me. Can you hear me, folks, in chat? Okay, we can hear you, Doc. Thank you very much. All right, so while Joe and Troy get squared away, the thing, once again, the situations we're facing today are monetary, greatly monetary in nature. And I've got to tell you that there was recently some information. When I was looking through the gold reserves, for example, where we are today with our gold reserves, and how much gold there is out there, we hear, for example, does Fort Knox have the gold? Does Fort Knox have any gold? And we'll get into that too, but it's rather interesting. But one thing that I happen to see, if you look at the run-up to the two world wars, for example, World War One and World War Two, and look at the gold supplies, and I'm not sure how many people really, really have paid much attention to this. And when I say paid much attention to this, or see the correlation here. And let me find my notes here that have this, because I think this is an extremely important aspect. As we run up debt, and as we run up national liabilities, and as the corporate banks take over our everything, It seems as though our gold supply is being questioned. We saw this happen back before the Second World War, but in the run-up to the Second World War, there was this massive increase in gold supplies, and to a lesser extent, in the run-up to the First World War. And now, at each time that there was, well, the creation of the Federal Reserve prior to the First World War, or that during that time period, and then the Bretton Woods Agreement, and then, of course, during the Vietnam War, Nixon taking us off the gold standard. And my question is this, I suppose. Are we seeing the monetary system being manipulated to such an extent that we're looking at perhaps World War III because of the monetary system? Or are we looking at the monetary system reacting to the potential of World War III? My guess, my bet, based on the research I've done, is we're looking at the manipulation of the monetary system, which will, in fact, World War III will be fought to cover or to hide the complete bankruptcy of this country, or at least to divert the attention from the complete bankruptcy of this country. It's hard to be fighting a third world war and then worried about, of course, who took the gold. Every nation involved in World War II greatly multiplied their debt. Between 1940 and 1950, the U.S. federal debt went from $43 billion to $257 billion, which was like a 600% increase. During that same period, Japanese debt increased by, 1,400%. These are staggering numbers. In 1950, James Paul Warburg, one of the architects of the Federal Reserve, said this. He said, "We shall have world government, whether we will like it or not. The only question is whether world government will be achieved by conquest or consent." And again, this brings me back right back to our gold reserves and how healthy we are economically as a nation, which we're not. So, Joe, are you back on with me?
Yeah.
Okay. You're breaking up now. So, I mean, I don't know what the deal is.
Really?
Yeah, really. Truly.
All right. Well, I don't hear you breaking up, and I want to see about chat. Second, you're breaking up. I don't know.
Okay. Are you using?
I am breaking up. I'm using. I'm called in as a guest.
Okay. But are you using Skype? Or? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
All right. Go ahead. Continue.
Well, all right. The other issue is this, and this I found, again, I found that we're facing a cover-up. We have countries, I shouldn't say people, we've got countries that are actually asking for our gold, or the gold that we're holding for them, asking for their gold back. And I'll tell you why this is important here in a minute, but I don't know how many people remember standing in the grocery store lines, the checkout lines. Remember, the tabloids like the Tattler. Remember that old newspaper, the Tattler, used to be right next to the Inquirer back in the early 1970s. Well, back at that time, there was an issue of the Tattler that said, there's no gold in Fort Knox. And, of course, you know, people made fun of the tabloids back in the early 70s. Now, some of what we see in the Inquirer, for example, leads the mainstream media. But the London gold pool and gold sales, gold drained from Fort Knox, this was not any secret back in the 1970s. We had touched on this yesterday, I believe, with the referencing the mainstream newspaper articles. But the full implication of the gold drain from America was not understood by too many people until it hit the tabloids back in the 70s. This does all connect, folks. Just bear with me. The government stonewalled, just as they are doing now today. They're telling us half-truths and lies that hiding the truth from the American people. But I'm going to draw your attention to an incident that happened on July 3rd, 1974, and I just learned about this year. a couple of months ago, I should say, from a friend of mine, and he said, pay attention to this one incident, because it was on July 3rd, 1974, that 59-year-old Louise Boyer died after falling from the window of her 10th-floor apartment at 530 East 86th Street. The event was ruled, and I'll quote this here, as a probable suicide, and duly reported the next day in the New York Times. But Mrs. Boyer, folks, do you know who she was? I'll bet you some of you do. She was a granddaughter of Colonel Mandel House, the man who guided the Federal Reserve Act through Congress for the Morgans and Rockefellers and Warburgs. And, you know, the other thing, too, about Louise Boyer, although it has not been determined whether there was a relationship, Jackie Kennedy's father was Hugh Auchincloss. Auchincloss, I suppose, is the way to pronounce it. Well, Mrs. Boyer's maiden name was Auchincloss. And it's known that Jackie Kennedy, her grandfather helped John D. Rockefeller found Standard Oil. What does this all mean? Well, her death did touch off a firestorm of controversy and rocked a previously solid part of Americana, the security of our national gold reserves held at Fort Knox. Because, you see, 3 days before she suicided herself from a 10-story window out of her Manhattan home, her Manhattan apartment, there was a headline in the National Tattler, and the headline read, International Monetary Expert Sounds Alarm. There is no gold left in Fort Knox. Federal Reserve System charged with the secret sale of the U.S. gold supplies overseas to super rich David Rockefeller. Now, the story charged that the Rockefeller family was manipulating the Federal Reserve to sell off Fort Knox gold at low prices to anonymous European speculators who were really fronting for them. And Mrs. Boyer was the executive assistant. Now, see how incestuous this is? She was the executive assistant to former Governor Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller. And remember that name, Aldrich. Do you know where that came from? Well, Nelson Rockefeller's grandfather, Senator Aldrich, was one of the founders of the Fed. You see how twisted and how insanely incestuous this is? And it served him in one capacity or another since 1944, just as Boyer's husband had served Lawrence Rockefeller for many years before his death. So all of this was all tied together. The reason I bring this up, there's this rich history that surrounds the gold in Fort Knox, or our gold, the gold that we reportedly have, that America reportedly have. You're going to be hearing in the near future that gold is gone, that it's totally gone. Because who's been the audits? Have we been allowed to audit the gold? I think people would be surprised to learn that year after year, the audits have been either internal or denied for the gold at Fort Knox. And you can search this on the internet and find the different dates and the different people involved in the attempts to audit the gold there. But what's really relevant to tonight's broadcast and to today and to our current situation is this. We are broke. The economic system is nothing but a house of cards. And the ushering in of the Third World War will, in fact, be part of this economic collapse, or will be either I don't want to say the cause of it, but it's a rather symbiotic relationship between what's taking place in Syria, what's taking place overseas, and what's taking place here in America economically. Because you see, China and Russia are attacking us, and they're attacking us through our weak underbelly of our economy. Why? Because, of course, we are playing games in Syria. And that leads us to today's headlines, where we are seeing where Syria is, where people are claiming that Obama is claiming that the chemical weapons were used in Syria, and this is how it all ties together. And we can also go in and talk too about Libya's 144 tons of gold and Muammar Gaddafi's son is in jail still and not talking about where that gold might be. And so there's so many relevant points throughout history until today. So, Joe, with respect to Syria and the chemical weapons and such, we're hearing reports now where chemical weapons are being used. At least those are the allegations in Syria. And again, once again, folks, understand that all of what you're seeing is tied to the economy. So the war and the economy, they're tied together. Everything is tied together. But I just want to introduce that to listeners, new listeners especially, for them to get the understanding that, look, what we're being told is untrue. You know,
last night driving home, local 1400 Fox, or one of the local stations here, was doing a local radio report on what was taking place in Syria overseas, and they said that on the news and locally here that the Assad government used chemical weapons on the rebels, and they had the evidence, and that was for sure.
Okay, the Assad rebels.
The Assad and government used.
Okay, the Assad
chemical
government.
Weapons on the rebels.
I see. Okay, I got you. So
now,
we're already blaming Assad. Yeah. Okay.
Well, and that's our local news, but the national news is not so quick to do so. I think that they said that they were going to act once the red line was crossed, but what if the red line was crossed by the people they're supporting? We've seen some violence in Damascus the last 2 days. There was an explosion yesterday aimed at the prime minister. There was a rocket blasted at a Russian passenger jet, and then today I have an audio clip here about another blast that hit Damascus, killing innocent people, done by the rebels.
Wow.
Do you want to hear this audio?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because it's very good.
I think this fits really well for this issue right now.
Yeah, it fits in with it talks about the Western influence and how desperate the rebels are getting. Here we go.
This blast comes almost exactly 24 hours after a similar explosion yesterday. A frightening pattern emerging here, would you say?
Absolutely. I think it's absolutely appalling what's going on at the moment. I mean, yesterday we had the convoy attack. We had the firing on the Russian passenger plane. And what this really shows is that the so-called rebels are getting more and more desperate. They don't have overwhelming public support. They don't have majority support. So they're getting more and more violent and more wild. And I think this sort of sums up how desperate their position is, really.
And the bomb again went off in a very crowded area. So what or who was the target of this blast?
Well, it's quite clearly that their aim is to spread terror amongst the population in Damascus, to terrorize civilians. And it's absolutely shameful that these people are being backed by my country, the UK, by France, by the Western powers. These are terrorist attacks. Let's call them what they are. They haven't been condemned by William Hague or Francois Hollande or John Kerry. I think that's absolutely appalling, because if these had taken place in Tel Aviv or in Riyadh or anywhere else in a country which was a Western ally, then they would be roundly condemned, but they're not. And it's quite appalling that these so-called rebels, with Western help, are trying to bomb their way to power in Syria, killing innocent civilians, spreading terror amongst the population. And I think that the likes of William Hague have got blood on their hands, I'm afraid.
Well, you mentioned the rebels there, and on Monday they immediately accused the government of faking the blast. Do you think today's explosion confirms or refutes this?
Well, it completely refutes it, I think, because, I mean, it's quite absurd to think that the Syrian government would be blowing up members of the government itself and putting bombs in crowded areas, because why would it want to do that for? I mean, it's quite clear that what's going on is an Al-Qaeda-dominated uprising now in Syria, a minority uprising by radical Islamists. And it's interesting, isn't it, that if you were to say that the Syrian government is behind these bombings in the Western media, then that's fine and acceptable. But if, of course, you say that the US government was behind the 9/11 attacks, you'd be denounced as a crank conspiracy theorist. And so it's okay to say that the Syrian government's done these things. But if we say the US government is capable of false flag operations, then that's fine. And that's completely wrong, of course.
There's been a lot of speculation, hasn't there, that Western money has been ending up in the hands of extremists. What do you make of that in the context of this blast?
Well, it clearly has, hasn't it? Because, of course, these blasts cost money. The bombing, the guns, the weaponry, etc. We already had the Sheikh Hamad of Qatar boasting a few days ago saying how his government was going to give the rebels any help it needed, including arms. The British government has been sending money into the rebels. And so I think the people who are funding these terrorists have got responsibility. They've got blood on their hands. And it's no good just saying, they're not even condemning it. And so I think that the responsibility for this lies with countries like Qatar, with Saudi Arabia, with Turkey, with Western powers who are, funding these people.
Okay, journalist and broadcaster Neil Clark, thank you for those views today.
Thanks very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, how long have you been hearing us talk about that Saudi connection? And now you're hearing it now in the mainstream media. And
that was from Russia today.
Okay, and I'd like to point out as well, in Benghazi, the attack on 9/11 in Benghazi, once again, not about security, not about the security for the CIA annex, but I want to point out as well that the United States was not the only shopkeeper, if you will, in Benghazi for the weapons. It was, and continues to be, the UK and France and this consortium of Western nations that are actually funding, fueling the terrorists, the anti-Assad terrorists. So we're setting this up, just as you heard on that clip. It's just not the United States.
It's such a mess.
Well, it is. It is. And
we have the rebels, and in that clip they said, being funded, allegedly being funded by the West. But there's no allegedly about it. They have pledged the United States hundreds of millions of our tax dollars. They are now talking about lethal aid or lethal munitions being given to the rebels now instead of boots on the ground. I was watching clips from Fox News today, and they were talking about the balance between an invasion and letting them take care of it themselves while we intervene from different areas aside from boots on the ground.
Well, anyone who does not believe that, or anyone who believes otherwise, that we're not going to have boots on the ground, I think is it's a pipe dream. I think we have to realize that we're being set up here. And once again, folks, it's not pimping my articles, and I'm not going to apologize for it, but all of this is recorded. If you really want to get a good understanding of what's going on in Benghazi, if you go to HomelandSecurityUS.com, that's HomelandSecurityUS.com, and CanadaFreePress.com, and just simply search Benghazi.
You just want to sell your articles.
Yeah, sell them. I get every time you read it, I get a buck or something. Now, it's about sharing the information. That's all it is. Wouldn't it be nice if I got a buck every time somebody clicked on an article? But it's about
even a penny
would be good. Sure, it's about getting the information out there, telling people what's really going on. And when I was preparing today for what I had to go through, and I got to say this, Joe, it was probably one of the most painful experiences. I've never birthed a child. Obviously, I'm just the wrong. I got the wrong plumbing for that. But, wow.
I'm laughing over here because he just made it sound like you were going to go through some kind of waterboarding experience. I prepped myself for what
I was
got ready to
down.
Go through today.
I was on one of
you
those
went to the dentist.
Tilt tables. Well, yeah, I mean, the surgeon guy. I mean, the tilt table. I was on the tilt table, which was exciting in and of itself. But you sit there and you start to think. And I was thinking, okay, I had a lot of time to think, in addition to scream. But no, I had a lot of time to think about this. And there was, I heard a story told that this is back in the summer of 2006, roughly, in the mid-2000s sometimes. This is before all the, oh, all the good times there, before the stock market went hit the high and then fell in 2008. There were too few people who really understood what was going on. And I would put myself in that category, not really understanding the danger ahead economically and on the world stage. There was a person, as the story goes, sitting in a doctor's office listening to an older woman, heavy with an accent, and she had she was talking about her kids, actually. She had four kids. Two of the four kids were very, very well off and worked in finance and worked in industry and very, very well off. And her other two children were barely getting by, were poor, as she described them. And she said, she was overheard saying, "I don't worry about my poor kids because they know how to deal with the hard times. I worry about my children who are well off because they're not going to be able to handle when the next big depression hits. They've never had that experience."
You're exactly right, and this is something I was thinking about before the show. How grateful we all should be that we've never experienced real persecution, violence, famine, and we might have here and there, you know, in flooding or natural disaster type scenarios, or we might have had our house was burned down. But we have live in a nation that is so rich, and we've been so grateful, and we do not take into account the running water as being something we have that can help us, that if lost, we would be going crazy in 48 hours. But we take it for granted every single day.
Well, you know, exactly. And I think, too, the other question, and I know people who listen to this show, one of the questions comes up, and even we have talked about this. At what point does the United States become not worth saving? And, of course, there are so many people who say, oh, you know what, it's too late. It's too late today. And everyone, oh, they all wave flags and, you know, chant USA, but it's too late. The USA is gone. And all we have now is this baseless, feel-good, crummy talk, okay, you know, talk that's meaningless. And I was reading on a popular internet forum earlier today as well about the very people saying, well, when is it time to declare the U.S. dead? At what point does the U.S. become not worth saving? And overwhelmingly, people were saying, the time's now. We're dead. It's gone. It's over. USA's dead. We are no longer. And, you know, there is no point in my mind that a true American gives up. Now, when I say true American, I'm talking about those who espouse the Christian viewpoint, the Christian backbone, the Christian principles that brought us up. How many, I mean, what kind of a disgrace to our forefathers who fought, and I don't care if you have a family member who fought in the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, the whatever war, pick a war. Are we not doing a disgrace to our forefathers who died for our freedoms? If the saving of this country on a moral and spiritual basis alone, and please understand that distinction, then let it be. Let it start right here, right now, and I'll tell you what, I'll take the point. Because in my mind, what is at stake here is not us, listener, it's not you, it's not me, it's our children. What are we leaving our kids?
Nothing.
We're leaving them some sewage of a nation? No, not on my watch.
But, nothing but debt and heartache. This is from Ezekiel chapter 12, verse 2. Son of man, thou dwellest in the midst of a rebellious house, which have eyes to see and see not. They have ears to hear and hear not, for they are a rebellious house. And that's where America is today. We have the President of the United States calling a professional sports player to thank him or give him gratitude, condolences for coming out openly saying he is gay and he is in the sports world. He is a major player in the sports world. The president's calling him. I mean, what about the people in Damascus? And Damascus being another situation. In your lifetime, when have you seen Damascus be in the center or almost in the center of world affairs? And when you read the Bible and it says Damascus will be a ruinous heap, and we're seeing it happen before our eyes incrementally, and I do believe it will become a ruinous heap in the end by some act of war or aggression, much more than we see today. But I was talking with somebody, we didn't even know what Damascus was 3 years ago, really. It was not in the picture, right, or the grand scheme of things. Things are changing. The people and the hearts and their minds of America are moving in one of two directions. They're moving towards God or they're moving away from God.
Well, you know, look at it this way. What we're seeing today, the headlines of today, are based on the headlines of the last decade or so. I mean, in relevance, we're talking pure relevance. Following 9/11, you had the Patriot Act. What a horrific, what a horrible piece of legislation. And yet, and again, I publicly apologize for my initial initial favoritism for the Patriot Act. And then you have the NDAA. But look at the headlines. You know, the Arab Spring, which has been touted by all of these progressives saying what a great thing, because we're taking out these dictator despots and replacing them and freeing the people. No, we're causing anarchy, but we're putting in Muslim Brotherhood parrots of Saudi Arabia, and the very Muslim Brotherhood that's in Egypt, folks, is in our White House. It's in our Department of Homeland Security. It's in our State Department. And you go back to and really, folks, if you want a homework assignment that's very, very serious and who have the time, please pick up a copy of the book by M. Stanton Evans, Blacklisted by History. It's about Eugene McCarthy, or it's about Senator McCarthy. And it details the infiltration, the communist infiltration into the State Department specifically, and even goes into certain things of late. But it's 600 and some odd pages. It's not an easy read. It's not a read. It's not something you sit down in an afternoon read. But you'll get an understanding of the intense infiltration. But see, Arab Spring was all about toppling these dictators and these despots, although they were controlled in favor of this radicalized movement that leads directly to the doors of Syria and, of course, the doors of Russia and China and the World War III. And people, you know, I've got five or six emails today. I've got five or six emails today from the articles I've done about Benghazi. People are reading them again. And one of the articles states that World War III, now, you know, emails is taking me to task, saying that the World War III is a bunch of hyperbole. What do you call 70,000 people in Syria dead, Joe? Is that hyperbole? What do you call?
No.
You know, what do you call the burning down of Christian churches by the very people that the White House and State Department is funding in Syria,
you know,
and in places like Egypt? Is that hyperbole?
Not at all. And I was reading a story, I guess, Dmitry Dudovin had a vision.
Yes.
1984. I finally watched that for the first time today. And he was helped by our State Department. He was given Bibles, sneaking them into Russia. The State Department was helping him do this. The U.S. State Department.
Okay.
Can you imagine today the U.S. helping smuggle Bibles anywhere?
No,
besides
no.
The burning
Korans. No, no. They'd be smuggling Korans in. Because we have a Muslim president. Well, when I say Muslim president, at least Muslim by parentage. And certainly a cultural Muslim, if you understand it. But we don't know what he is because we are not privy to knowing what he is. We're not privy to seeing the documentation behind Barry Satoru, or if that is his name, or Barack Hussein Obama. We're not exactly sure what his name is yet. Yes, no, I couldn't imagine, you know, today smuggling Bibles. No, we have the army burning Bibles in Afghanistan that were shipped over there in Arabic because we didn't want to incite the locals. Yet, what do we do, though? What are we doing over there right now? We're burning Bibles and we're smuggling in. We're paying off the Taliban and protecting the opium crop. All meanwhile, overshadowing the pipelines that are being built by the international bankers so we can get the oil out of the region. For who? For Saudi Arabia. Why? Because some of their oil wells were destroyed during the Gulf War.
And I want to jump in here and say, if I can add this, Pastor Paul did a video on the Pentagon hiring a anti-Christian person for helping with their religious efforts. We went over the story yesterday. This was on Breitbart. Pastor Begley did a great video on it today. And he talks and shows pictures of his sons who are active in the Navy right now.
Okay.
And explains, you know, how would they feel if they were told, you know, by that Weinstein guy that, and in that article, it goes on to say that they should take these chaplains and via whatever what's the military justice system?
The UCMJ.
Not a tribunal, but yeah. That they said they should start court-martialing any chaplain who teaches the Gospels to soldiers. And he brought that point up and said, you know, his sons, he couldn't imagine his sons going to counseling or to talk to somebody in a religious way in the military and being told, you know, you can't talk about the Gospels, you can't bring up Jesus' name. I mean, he was heartbroken about that. I can't imagine
the
military that will willingly remove the Lord. I mean, you are removing the only protection you will ever have. A gun can't protect you supernaturally. Not the smartest person in the world can supernaturally protect themselves. Only the Lord's protection can really get you in and out of trouble or keep you out of trouble.
Exactly. And you're right. And but see, this was not and a lot of people and listeners understand, this did not just happen, for example, with Obama saying, okay, we're going to do this, or under Obama's Department of Defense, we're going to do this. If you remember, this began, the encroachment really began, with respect to the Muslims, began with George W. Bush. Okay, there's blood on his hands, and a lot of it, and Condoleezza Rice, a lot of it. And Karzai, a lot of blood, because these are the internationalists, these are the globalists who sit back and they laugh at us and they say, you know what, we're going to make these rules, and this is why today, when I was talking to Steve Quayle today, there was an email, I cannot share the all of the email, but I'll give you the gist of it. You're not missing anything. I'm just going to give you the gist of what this email said. There is a young person fighting in Afghanistan who wrote back to his family saying, I cannot get we as a battalion, as a group, cannot get the necessary armaments to defend our position, to defend ourselves. And right at the time I was talking to Steve, I got an email from another source whose grandson is not too far away in Afghanistan as well, who said he was injured by a roadside bomb, by the way, and suffered some pretty bad injuries, yet went back to fight. And when his injuries from his roadside bomb just months ago flared up, and he said, look, you know what, I can't finish, I can't do this, and was certified by a doctor to be disabled. He was denied benefits because it was a pre-existing condition. That, you would think, well, wait a minute, that's just kind of like that just got messed up. The paperwork just got messed up, or somebody interpreted it wrong. But during his period of time in trying to get this whole thing, you know, unscrewed, he finds out he's not the only one. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of veterans who are being disabled in the line of duty, who are being classified as having pre-existing conditions and therefore being denied benefits by the military. This is how we're treating our veterans. Oh, and then, by the way, when you do come back home, you are classified as having PTSD, and they take your guns. This is not a joke. I wish it was. This is not a joke.
No.
Wow. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're gonna go up. We got top of the hour break, it looks like. Might as well take it now, as we're at a good stopping point. And I want to thank you for covering there with the audio issues in the beginning, and talking about the Warburgs and stuff. There's a lot there we need to get into on one of these shows about the history of World War II and those who funded the Nazis. I think that's important because their seed, their kids, grandkids, are the people who are in power today.
Well, on the other side, Joe, you know what? On the other side, on the top of the hour, we're just going to touch on the fact that really both sides, or the globalists are funding both sides of every conflict that you're seeing across the globe.
Yep.
And with that, folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report. Go ahead and take us out.
Yeah, you'll listen to the Hagman and Hagman Report this April 30th, the last day of April. And on the other side, we're going to hit also Saturn Hurricane. I don't know if you saw a picture of this, Dad, or listeners. I'll post an article from BBC in chat right now onto you in Skype. There is an enormous storm raging on Saturn's North Pole. It looks like a hurricane of fire.
And by the way, you can see Saturn. I don't know if you know this. If you're in, I think if you're in the Western Hemisphere, you can see Saturn with the rings with a pair of binoculars. There's a video of helicopter with the naked eye actually looking at Saturn. An amazing picture. Sorry, Jeff. I want to put it in.
We'll be right back after these short messages. You're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report this Tuesday, April 23rd, 13th.
Hi, folks. Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman and Hagman Report, or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines. You just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's canadafreepress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Ilana Johnson-Powell. A lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at canadafreepress.com. Now mobile friendly. Follow on Facebook, because without America, there is no free world.
You better wake up fast and listen to this, America. The Obama campaign has launched attack squads disguised as truth teams dedicated to intimidating and silencing all political dissent carried over the internet that criticizes the Marxist Obama. Truth Squad specifically focused on covering up Obama's endless trail of lies, corruption, and subversion, and using the Gestapo power of our own government to police and censor the internet and shut down websites that dare to carry the real truth about Obama's Marxist coup. Remember the names of these Gestapo-style agencies at work right there in your neighborhood: KeepingHisWord.com, KeepingGOPHonest.com, and AttackWatch.com. KGB, SS, and Gestapo-style police state gangster organizations at work to silence the important voices of patriot dissent, some of which have already been shut down by Obama's orders. Adolf Hitler would have been proud. We're the 21st century Tea Party Patriots.
Survival of the fittest. In any and all situations, survival is your number one priority. That requires being tough and thinking smart. And the folks at Freeze Dry Guy are going to help you do just that. They have the long-range patrol ration entrees, what they call the brick pack. When you're in survival mode, it is absolutely the best item for your survival pack or bug-out bag. You can go farther, faster, and carry more food with the LRP cold weather ration entrees. Not only do these long-lasting, durable entrees help sustain you or your family through the harshest environment or situation, they are by far the most delicious of their kind. No contest. With a variety of tasty entrees, you can't beat the LRP brick packs. Let Freeze Dry Guy help you in your survival situations. Go to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-FOOD.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Hagman and Hagman Report. This Tuesday, April 30th, 2013, the last day of April, moving into May.
Yep.
And
you know,
I'm going to open this hour.
Joe, let me just say this once and for all. Tomorrow we're going to have a meeting. We're going to have to make some decisions as to what we're going to do if it requires us to, and I'm being very serious about this, if it requires us to put everything we have up to actually acquire some sort of a station, brick-and-mortar station, beyond the brick-and-mortar that we have, that we use to simulcast this broadcast, we will do so. That's our commitment to our listeners, because this show is growing all the time. I just heard from somebody listening live right now in Perth, Australia, and the number of people who are relying on us to get the information out is growing. So we will rise up to that challenge and no longer have, you know, I don't want to have any further online discussions, for example, about or on-air discussions about sound quality, sound problems, sound issues. It just takes away from the program. But I want to say that I want to give you my pledge, and it's I've got a couple of emails today where people are saying, well, you know, you're not addressing the sound issues. We are addressing them. It's just that they're addressing us more than we're addressing them. They're getting ahead of us. And, Joe, before you get into what you've got, I just want to say this as well. Michael, thank you, by the way. I believe it was Michael who sent this to me. Yes, Michael, it was. Or it was Michael. Bill Gertz has got a scoop, if you will, about a major cyber incident. It's going to be on the freebeacon.com. That's freebeacon.com. I've had the opportunity to talk to Bill Gertz, formerly of the Washington Times. He runs the Free Beacon, just a fantastic investigator. But currently on the Free Beacon right now is something that we're facing, and that's intimidation. And I just want to say, too, part of the intimidation, for example, he writes the intimidation about the Benghazi survivors and CIA people, and I know this is something you're going to get into. but he writes about that on the Free Beacon. But let me just say this, the reprisals, subtle intimidation and such. What makes you think, folks, if they can go after CIA operatives, State Department officials are engaged in this intimidation, and this administration, they're engaged in this intimidation, what makes you think that they're not coming after us, little puny people like us, really that are you know, nothing but bugs on their windshield? Believe me, you know, they can and will come after us for causing them grief, especially about Benghazi. But that said, I just want to get all that out and welcome the new listeners too for this second hour. So, Joe, you take it from here.
As I said earlier in the show, U.S. basketball player Jason Collins was one of the first to publicly declare that he was a homosexual in a public, or in the first person to come out in the world of basketball, and to be called by the President Obama to congratulate him. But I want to play an audio clip, just a minute and 49-second audio clip, of a friend of his, Chris Broussard. He's an ESPN analyst. And this is his take on his friend, Jason Collins, coming out in the public.
I'm a Christian. I don't agree with homosexuality. I think it's a sin, as I think all sex outside of marriage between a man and a woman is. And LZ knows that. He and I have played on basketball teams together for several years. We've gone out, had lunch together. We've had good conversations, good laughs together. He knows where I stand, and I know where he stands. I don't, you know, criticize him. He doesn't criticize me and call me a bigot, call me ignorant, call me intolerant. And that I hear, and talking to some people around the league, there are a lot of Christians in the NBA. And they don't want to be, just because they disagree with that lifestyle, they don't want to be viewed and called bigoted and intolerant and things like that. And that's what LZ was getting at. Just like I may tolerate someone whose lifestyle I disagree with, he can tolerate my beliefs, and he disagrees with my beliefs and my lifestyle, but true tolerance and acceptance is being able to handle that as mature adults and not criticize each other and call each other names. Personally, I don't believe that you can live an openly homosexual lifestyle or an openly premarital sex between heterosexuals. If you're openly living that type of lifestyle, then the Bible says you know them by their fruits. It says that, you know, that's a sin. And if you're openly living in unrepentant sin, whatever it may be, not just homosexuality, adultery, fornication, premarital sex between heterosexuals, whatever it may be, I believe that's walking in open rebellion to God and to Jesus Christ. So I would not characterize that person as a Christian, because I don't think the Bible would characterize him as a Christian.
Wow. Now, folks, I'm going to ask you to pray for both the gentleman, Collins, who made the announcement that he was gay, and the reporter, Chris Broussard, who will probably lose his job over stating the words Jesus Christ on air.
But it wasn't accompanied by an expletive. Yes, yes. Sorry. You can't have that.
There's also an article out here that I'm reading, you know, athlete out of the closet, but prejudice lingers. And what is their statement? What is the prejudice that is lingering? Well, it was this commentator's analysis of his friend coming out openly that we just played. Now, is that prejudice? Does that sound prejudice to you?
My goodness. No, no. You know, it's a breath of fresh air that, now, see, that person. What was his name? I really think we need to.
ESPN analysis guy. His name is Chris Broussard.
Okay, Chris Broussard. We need to make sure that we elevate him to the proper status, because just as we remain critical of the others, we must elevate those who are actually doing God's work. And I think, to me, I heard God's work being done in that statement. That's what I believe. You know, I mean, man, I'll tell you, how great
right.
is that?
I mean, he said he was friends with this gentleman, that they go out to lunch together, that they talk together, and they both understand where each other is coming from, and they can have a debate. They can tolerate each other and each other's viewpoints and still be friends. And I think that's what the Lord really calls us to do. We can't judge other people's eternal soul.
No, but you can't. You
we can point them
condone.
In the right direction.
But right. See, you can't condone. Because I dare say, and I'll bet you the vast majority of our listeners, folks, you've got a relative either engaged in a homosexual relationship or you know is cheating on his wife or a woman cheating on her husband, or you know simply maybe a member of your family living together in a heterosexual relationship out of wedlock.
Yeah, notice he included all fornication, all sexual sin, not just homosexuality.
Exactly. We need, look, we're all in the same position, I believe. I believe that this has touched every American family, or if it hasn't yet touched your family, it will, or you just don't know about it. Now, having said that, we cannot tolerate the act. We shouldn't tolerate. We shouldn't, I mean, we should not be, you know, that's one thing I will object to. I don't think we should tolerate the sin or the act. I think it's our duty to say something, but I don't, at that point, after you say something, I don't know. Have you, and I'll throw this out to the listeners, have you met your duty as a Christian? If you say something, I mean, what else can you do? You can't stop them from living together or engaging in that kind of behavior. So is merely saying something, have you met your Christian obligation? Or should you just butt out? What's the answer in a case like this?
Well, it depends. In a case like this, this is coming. They asked for his opinion. The gentleman, this Chris, who is on TV, and he is a friend of the gentleman. If anybody should be able to speak of this issue, he should be able to, and he did.
How do you think that's going to affect their friendship?
I don't think it will. If both of these gentlemen are decent people, they can have intellect enough to be able to peacefully disagree, which most people have lost that ability. I mean, we can't change people. We can't make them be what we want them to be or what we expect them to be.
Right. But shouldn't we?
The only thing we can do is point out if they are your friend, you point out where they're wrong, and pick them up. And if they don't take that advice, that's on them. But you have to have a duty as a friend to say, hey, this is not right.
Well, I think you've got a duty as a Christian and a duty as a friend that it's not right. If it costs you a friendship or if it costs you an estrangement, you know, folks, what we're talking about here is real world Christian things, because, like I said, I believe probably 95% or maybe even higher percentage of our listeners have a family member or a friend or someone that they know or are close to that fit one of those categories. And I guess my question is, you know, at what point do you start and what point do you stop? But I do think that we have, Joe, I think that we, in a family situation, I think that we especially have the duty to point out, not in a condescending way, but in a very loving way, to point
right.
out that you know, hey, man.
If I'm being arrogant, and if I'm, you know, doing something wrong, I would expect people to say, hey, Joe, this isn't right. This isn't proper what you're doing or how you're approaching this. Just bringing this to your attention because, you know, who are you hurting with your behavior? You're hurting yourself. You're hurting your own future.
And
you're not hurting your neighbor.
Yeah, well, yes, and if you care enough about the individual, which you're going to be showing that you're caring enough about that person to tell them, look, this is not godly behavior, and back it up with perhaps scripture however you'd want to do it. I think it's our duty to do it. But that said, this is really real world things that are going on. And this, it might not seem, compared to the headlines in Syria and compared to the everything else going on, if everyone starts at home, isn't that a stepping stone to shut the mouths of Obama, Barry Satoru, Barack Hussein Obama, from reaching out and touching someone with his phone and saying, hey, congratulations, God bless you for, you know, coming out to this sports figure?
No, instead of that, you have Obama saying, God bless Planned Parenthood.
Well, right,
God bless
of course.
Homosexual athletes for coming out and taking a stand. We have God being removed from schools, from sports, from the military, and bestiality and homosexuality being uplifted and replaced as that status.
Right. And yeah, exactly. And so, but yet, this man, this, for example, Barry Satoru, Barack Hussein Obama, claims to be a Christian, or at least espouse Christian principles, doing everything to pervert Christianity, using his office to do so. And we've got silence as well from the peanut gallery, the Congress. They're silent as well on this issue, or they're favoring the issue. By the way, I believe this sincerely, that the Supreme Court will vote in favor of upholding the homosexual covenant. I'm not sure what the best way to say that is. I know the Supreme Court is, are they not, Joe, still deliberating on this homosexual law from California? Okay.
Yeah, I think in June we're supposed to see a ruling. A homosexual bill in California that was voted by the the Californian public to make sure that gay marriage is banned in their state, overturned by Supreme Court, saying that ruling or voting by the people is unconstitutional. Now to be picked up by the Supreme Court, and we will hear results. In June, that remember, we heard the arguments at the beginning of this month, and they seemed really harsh towards gay marriage, just like they did on Obamacare. They seemed really harsh during the arguments of Obamacare, but magically came back and said, yeah, Obamacare is not unconstitutional. It is legal for the United States government to mandate that you purchase something from them.
Say that again. Say that again.
Supreme Court, when dealing with the Obamacare situation, during the argument phase, before they made their ruling, were very critical of different parts of the Obamacare, like the individual mandate and other areas, making religious institutions cover birth control and abortions.
Right. I just wanted to remind
their ruling,
people.
Yeah, it was not the way it sounded in the arguments, just like when they went through the gay marriage argument.
That's right.
Earlier this month, we heard even, I think, Sotomayor be very critical of it, her herself as a lesbian, and other justices being very critical of the homosexual marriage argument. But I don't think we're going to see anything different with Obamacare. I think they're going to.
Or
yeah,
as
yes.
Obamacare, yeah. Yeah, I just wanted
marriage
that repeated.
Marriage is between two people, regardless of their sex. Maybe even include an animal in there, you know, between two things, regardless of their status, whether they're a human or an animal or a plant. If you want to marry a tree, you can, I guess, now in America. We are this modern-day Sodom and Gomorrah.
Exactly. And the what I base my and I'm glad the reason I asked you to repeat it is just for reinforcement. But the reason I base my opinion on this is because it was said, and I believe this is an accurate number, right around 1,100 federal regulations would be affected with this decision. And it's kind of a mess right now. But, you know, for example, if you live in a state that allows a homosexual union, you cannot file federally this federal income taxes, you know, married filing jointly, or, you know, even if you're legitimately recognized as being married. I'm using that as one example. So this is the reason why I believe it will come out that in June, where there will be, it'll be fall in favor of the homosexuals. But all in all, I think that was a good, very good clip, a very refreshing clip. But I also believe that the behavior of this putative president that we have, this Barack Hussein Obama, Barry Satoru, I believe that his actions, his behavior is repugnant and is antithetical to all Christians and an insult to every Christian. And you know what bothers me the most as well, since we're on the subject of homosexuality probably longer than we should be, is you know, we're not hearing the Muslims come out and condemn this homosexuality because, and of course, in Saudi Arabia, you know, that's there are severe penalties. Well, without going down that road, I guess, it's interesting the silence. I'll just leave it at that, the silence of the Muslims. On just about everything that this president has been doing is just incredible to me. Whereas if it was Bush, it would be different. And I understand that's the right-left paradigm or Republican-Democrat paradigm. However, I think it's still worthy of note. Now, let's move on, I guess, Joe.
All right, switching gears here. The Boston, alleged family of the Boston bombers, the Zarnev family, received over $100,000 in welfare benefits.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The Zarzan family, including the suspected terrorists and their parents, believed or benefited more than $100,000 in taxpayer-funded assistance, a bonanza ranging from cash and food stamps to Section 8 housing from 2002 to 2012, the Herald has learned. This being part of what we're seeing with the new amnesty push, the new immigration bill push, and we have people from the USDA being directed by the Obama camp to push food stamps on people, on new immigrant families, saying, going back to before, remember there was a commercial about November, December, where they said that it was an economic stimulus, and you were doing your town a disfavor by not getting on welfare if you were eligible, because you're taking away that economic stimulus from your county or your town. But
well, you know,
is something that's going to need to be. They're trying to make 11 million illegal immigrants legal. I want to know how many of those people are self-sufficient or have business plans or an idea of what they want to do. There is a need here, and this should be the land of the free that is a home to those who are being persecuted, a place of refuge. People should be able to go if they are in trouble in their own country because of, reasons of genocide and other governmental problems when they are innocent. But just to give blanket immunity to as many people as are in this country illegally without doing the due diligence of background checks on these people, without finding out who they're associated to, if they're really worried about a problem such as terrorism, it seems very immature to me to just...
Well, they're not worried about terrorism. This is about balkanizing America. You've got the number being bandied about out there is 11 million illegal immigrants, illegal aliens in this country, 11 million. The number, according to places like Shadow Stats and other places, if you use the more proper numbers, it would be closer to 20 million. And to have this Gang of Eight, and we talked about this before. Think about this, a Gang of Eight, four members of the House and Senate Select Committees on Intelligence, and the four leaders of the House and Senate, four Republicans, four Democrats. And the Gang of Eight is a modification of a legal requirement that the president must ensure that the congressional intelligence committees are kept fully and currently informed, that is, of intelligence activities of the United States. And this does include, for example, illegal aliens in this country. So this Gang of Eight is actually crafting this amnesty bill, and that's exactly what it is. The Gang of Eight consists of, in case folks you have forgotten or don't know the Gang of Eight, you're talking about Republican Senators John McCain and Jeff Flake, both of Arizona, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, and Marco Rubio of Florida. Boy, some of those names ring a bell when it comes to other interesting legislation. And then you've got Democratic Senators Charles Schumer of New York, Dick Durbin of Illinois, Robert Menendez of New Jersey, and Michael Binet of Colorado. You know, explain to me, and I don't know how many people have either studied Shakespeare or in college have had experience or exposure to Shakespeare, but Hamlet was a very popular Shakespearean play, and the minor character Marcellus in Hamlet had said in the first act, as a matter of fact, of the play Hamlet, something is rotten in the state of Denmark. And this might well describe the current state of affairs here in the United States, where the proverbial fish is rotting from the head down. And that includes not only Obama, but this Gang of Eight and all of the Congress and senators, because we are going to see this influx of illegal immigrants. And as you said, $100,000, Joe, for this family in largesse, government largesse.
Over 10 years. Yeah.
Over 10 years. But then I believe if you do check out the Drudge Report next to it, you'll find a story. And you can find many of these stories where there are vans filled with EBT cards and such, millions upon millions of dollars that are being sold and otherwise given to people illegally. It's crazy.
Caseworker. Illegal aliens got food stamps by van load. For decades, the U.S. government has knowingly given illegal immigrants food stamps, according to a former certification caseworker who denounced the costly practice back in the 1980s, but essentially was ordered to keep a lid on it. The retired assistant case manager, Craig McKenese, was in charge of vetting food stamp applicants in North Florida and Indiana in the 1980s. And says the program was infested with fraud, corruption that perpetually was ignored by management. Illegals would come in by the van load and we were told to give them stuff. Management knew that they were illegal. It was so rampant that some of the employees would tell their illegal relatives to come and get food stamps. So yes, I mean, and this really hurts the people who are in this country, who were born in this country, who can't put two nickels together because of the changes that this country has undergone by shipping all of our manufacturing jobs out of the country, by really killing the free market industry and taxing businesses, individual businesses. But people who are coming here who might have a business or be self-sufficient in other countries or just irresponsible are coming here and being handed free money, taxpayer money, the same taxpayer money that some of people from America might have paid into when they had a job for years. Now that they don't or lost their job, need help and can't get it. This is probably why.
Well, and ladies and gentlemen, I believe, like, because these discussions, and it's important to have these discussions with others, and if you're in a social setting where something like this does come up, or a family setting where you're talking about this as news of the day, you know how you might be sitting in a coffee shop or at a bar or at a family gathering, and the conversation moves to the topics of the day, like this one. You've got to understand the history behind this. I just want to just touch on this briefly because this is so important to me. You know, and it's one thing to stand up there at a social gathering or whatever, not have note cards, obviously. You know, it'd be kind of weird to take out note cards from your pocket. But think about this. people talk about the Cloward-Piven strategy. How many people really, really, really understand what the Cloward-Piven strategy is all about and can articulate that to someone that they're having an intellectual discussion with or even an argument about? The Cloward-Piven strategy, just briefly, it was first proposed in 1966. It was named after Columbia University sociologist Richard Cloward and his wife, Frances Piven, Frances Fox Piven. The Cloward-Piven strategy seeks to hasten the fall of capitalism by overloading the government bureaucracy with a flood of impossible demands and pushing society into crisis and economic collapse. And this is what we're seeing right now. And what I think is probably one of the most and put this in perspective, too, of the 1965 riots in the black district of Watts in Los Angeles, which, by the way, that resulted from after police had used batons to subdue a black man suspected of drunk driving. Gee, where'd we hear this before? Anyway, Cloward-Piven published an article titled "The Weight of the Poor, A Strategy to End Poverty." That was in 1966, May 2nd to be exact. And that anniversary is coming up on Thursday of the issue of The Nation. But right after it was published, the sales of this Nation, the magazine, sold like 30,000 reprints. It was just an unprecedented number of reprints. The communists in this country, which are now called progressives, were just ecstatic. And in fact, what they were attempting to do were implement the Cloward-Piven strategy. Both Cloward and Piven charged that the ruling classes, the so-called 1%, they're using welfare to weaken the poor. And that by providing a social safety net, for example, by providing the benefits, the rich douse the fires of rebellion and we're actually holding back the poor people. So that's what this is all about. That's what the Cloward-Piven strategy is to hasten the fall of capitalism by overloading the demands. And isn't what we're seeing, what we're talking about right now, isn't that what this blanket amnesty is going to be? Isn't this what, are we not seeing Cloward-Piven in action from the Gang of Eight and ultimately from Obama? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, we are. Moving on here, I want to get to this Benghazi
sure.
clip. Listen to this, guys. This is very, very important. And this goes to something you spent a lot of time on, the Benghazi investigation. You've right. brought forth so much information through your sources, through articles on our website in Canada Free Press. And when I heard this today, I wasn't surprised by it because you mentioned this yesterday, and this is something we've talked about. But why? Why the need for a cover-up? Folks, this is about Benghazi intimidating whistleblowers, removing protection from them. Listen to this audio. It's from Fox News.
Good evening. I'm Brett Baer. Two major stories tonight on the Benghazi terror attack and what some lawmakers charge is a vast and growing cover-up concerning the assault that left four Americans dead, including the U.S. ambassador, on 9/11. We still don't know how many people were injured that night. The administration insists those events have been investigated enough and that it's time to move on. We have Fox Team coverage tonight with two explosive stories. Adam Housley in Los Angeles talks exclusively to a special operator who says military help was available, despite what the administration has said. But we begin with accusations that the president's people are making threats against Benghazi witnesses. Chief Washington correspondent James Rosen reports from the State Department on an incredibly serious charge before Congress starts a new round of hearings. Good evening, James.
Brett, good evening. Secretary of State Kerry told House lawmakers earlier this month he doesn't want to spend the next year coming to Capitol Hill to talk about Benghazi, but new charges from within his own department could make that a reality.
Fox News has learned that at least three career State Department employees
and at least one more at the Central Intelligence Agency have retained lawyers or are in the process of doing so in order that they can provide sensitive information to Congress about Benghazi. The four consider themselves whistleblowers and want their counsel to receive the security clearances that would enable them to review classified documents. But the lawyer representing one of the employees at State told us the department is not providing a process for that, and even worse, is actively threatening her client and the others.
I'm not talking generally. I am talking specifically about Benghazi, that people have been threatened, and not just the State Department. That people have been threatened at the CIA. It's frightening, and they're taking career people and making them well aware that their careers will be over.
It was on September 11 that four Americans, including our ambassador to Libya, were killed in terror attacks on U.S. installations in Benghazi. Tunsing said her client has pertinent information on the months preceding the attacks, when pleas for enhanced security were rejected, on the eight-hour span of the attacks themselves, and on the eight-day period following the attacks, when the Obama administration falsely described them as the result of a spontaneous protest over a video.
So, if you have additional questions or you think there's some document that somehow you need, I'll work with you to try to get it.
Secretary of State Kerry told lawmakers this month that Obama administration officials have testified at eight Benghazi hearings, held 20 Benghazi briefings, turned over 25,000 pages of Benghazi documents, and released an unclassified version of the report prepared by the so-called Accountability Review Board. Today, Kerry's spokesman insisted all standard procedures have been followed in terms of cooperation with Congress.
I'm not aware of private counsel seeking security clearances or anything to that regard. I'm not aware of whistleblowers one way or another. Congress has its own prerogatives, but we've had a very thorough, independent investigation, which we completed and were transparent and shared, and there are many folks who are in a political manner trying to sort of use this for their own political means or ends.
That was a jab at Republican Congressman Daryl Issa of California, chair of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, who wrote to Secretary of State Kerry last week, and I quote, "The department's unwillingness to make the process for clearing an attorney more transparent appears to be an effort to interfere with the rights of employees to furnish information to Congress," unquote. That, Brett, is obviously a charge the administration rejects.
And there you have it. Dad, you had spoken to Adam Housley of Fox News over 3 months, and the true story is not coming out. And they said at the very beginning, Brett Baer said, they don't even know the number injured on that night. Don't have an accurate count of that now.
Joe and folks, you know, it's amazing. It was, the first time I spoke with Adam Housley, it was an amazing situation where I'm talking to my intelligence source, who said, "Hang on, let me conference you in on with someone." And on the other end of the phone was Adam Housley from Fox News, and this is about Benghazi. This is early on now, and throughout the course of, I'm going to say, 3 months, maybe 4 months, the information passed by this intelligence source to people like Adam Housley and people like him and other names you would know, but I won't mention, and I only mention Adam Housley in here because his name came up in here, but there are other names that you would mention as well, or that you would know, you would recognize as well. Every single time that this story was going to be in the forefront, Benghazi, the cover-up, every time that Adam Housley said, we got it, this is it, kind of, I mean, picture Woodward and Bernstein back in the movie, you know, the Watergate, we got it, and then all of a sudden being told by some office on the corner office in the 42nd floor of the building, "You're not running with it. You're not going to run with the story." Now it's coming out. I'm not sure what's going to be coming out, though. I'm not sure if we're going to get the truth. And the CIA, the State Department, and this regime, this Obama regime, is threatening the very people who put their lives on the line doing what they were told to do. And you know something? You know when things later on, and this is kind of a somewhat out of context, but I'm going to throw this in here anyway. When you're doing your job as an American, and you're working as an American, and you're overseas doing something, and you stop to ask the question, is what I'm doing legal? Fire and brimstone can come down upon your head. Just keep that in the back of your mind, folks. And also, the threats. They're very real. And pray. Pray like you've never prayed before for the people involved, that they're able to get their stories out, that the true story comes out, because this is the only way that this regime will be exposed. And perhaps we can buy some time for the sake of our children to avoid a third world war. And No, it's not avoidable. But you know what? Every day that we can put it off, every month that we can put it off, or week, or every second, can we not use that time to bring people to the truth and to the light and to understand what's going on?
Yes. Yes, we can. Every opportunity, every breath, every second we have left is an opportunity to spread the good news and the real truth. That truth being, first and foremost, the word of the Lord that's in the Bible. But if we can't understand that basic and fundamental truth, we're in trouble.
But what really gets me about this, Joe, and I think you were with me a couple of times when I was on the phone with Adam Hosley and others from Fox News, and excuse me, sharing the information and listening to what was being shared, being able to be a part of the conversation and providing information that I had as well, and acting as a liaison and whatever little part that I was able to do. But see, that was from a receptive person, a person who is receptive. Okay, now think about the other networks who are not even one bit receptive, who say, no, we're not going to do this. This does not conform with the agenda of this current administration. And that's what we have as news, if you want to call it, as news broadcasters, news networks. This is what we have today. So it's when you've got that little glimmer of hope, you think it's going to come out, you think it's going to come out in October, or no, maybe November or December. Okay, January, and it doesn't. And then February, and now it's almost May. That's how long it's taken. But we've been working a lot behind the scenes to get the story out. And let's just hope and pray. Please, people, pray that the story does come out.
Yeah, we need that. Not that it would do much difference with the administration. I don't think these people will be held accountable for anything they do. But at least it will bring peace of mind to those families involved, the people who have been working so hard to get the truth out. And it would just be a feel-good thing. More so than justice, because we know we're not going to get justice in this country.
You know, and there's one thing I probably should.
At least not now.
No, we're not going to. You know what? We're not going to get justice in this country. It's not justice anymore, as you and I know it. It's just us, and that's probably stealing that from Gerald Celente. But. I'll say this. I probably shouldn't say it, but I can blame it upon my mental condition. I've had the opportunity to speak with someone very, 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 very close to one who perished in Benghazi. That person is doing everything in their power to make sure that the death of their loved one, their son, is not in vain. So you're going to see other things come out as well. I do believe that you're going to see the truth come out. Whether it's timely enough to stop what's coming, I don't know. Whether it's going to matter, I don't know, because when you've got half the population that's in a drug-induced haze and don't know anything more than what, is Snooki still relevant? Joe, do we know that? Whoever Snooki is, wasn't Snooki something? Anyway.
Yeah, I remember. That's the one of the loud ones. That's a Jersey Shore person. That's who that was.
All right. I mean, Dancing with the Stars.
For those who don't know, yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen commercials in a long time or cable TV in a while, but Jersey Shore is still a show. There was a big fiasco about these people. And I say fiasco, I mean, what's the word? Obsession. Like Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah,
like,
I was thinking of a different word, but I couldn't say it.
Yeah, but I don't even know if they're still a TV show or if they're still relevant or not. But
well,
either way.
But it's the perversion of importance, of what's
right.
Important in people's lives. That's
more
really
people knew the names of the cast of Jersey Shore than they knew the politics or the working of the politics here in their own country. And what do we have now? Obamacare. Poll finds 42% of Americans are unaware that it is now law.
Oh.
Even though it's about to affect their tax brackets and their pockets in a bad way. They're unaware it's law.
I got to tell you, Joe, I got to share this with you, and the listeners can, you know, listen to this as well. I didn't tell you this. In fact, I just found out about this today. My wife's been meaning to tell me about this. For the Hagmans, by the way, April has been the month. Actually, this whole year for the Hagmans, you, Joe, and your wife and me and my wife, anyway, of medical procedures. So we're pretty aware of the Obamacare aspect and influence of things, all right? Whether it's regardless of the situation, but I just found out about this today. My wife had a certain procedure done here, a couple of weeks ago, a medical procedure where she had it was done in a surgical center and she had to be put out and brought, you know, the whole nine yards. And so I was only able to accompany her to a certain point, like you are in a hospital, you know, and they stop you and then they take your loved one and they wheel them away. And the next time you see,
I tell you that I never, that might be procedure, but I go. I don't stay back unless they're taking them into like actual
operating
room.
Yeah,
you
can't go. Yeah, yeah. So
anywhere else though.
Well, right. But my wife told me this today. As the doors shut, and there was a sealed doorway, so there was no way that I could hear. In no way that anyone else could hear. So she was far from me with a nurse. Now, this is after a series of questions, medical questions and family questions and all sorts of questions. They were already asked and answered. And once they got her back into the actual, like the ante room for where the procedure was going to be done, another nurse came up and said, "Ma'am, I've got some questions to ask you, including but not limited to, are you in an abusive relationship? Are you being threatened, beaten by your husband or any other family member?"
Well, yeah, what's considered abusive?
Well, I don't know. Or have you been threatened by any family member? And there was also a question about a gun in there too. You know, does your family own a gun? Well, of course, all the answers were negative. Okay, and the procedure went through without a hitch. But the mere fact that these questions are now, and by the way, it was made known that these questions had to be asked because of the new changes to the changes to the laws. Now these new laws that are in place. From Obamacare. So you've got this element of society that doesn't even know Obamacare is in play or a law. And then you've got these terribly invasive questions. Now, I understand. Look, I do understand about the abusiveness and what goes on. And, hey, if you're being held hostage, blink twice. You know, but it's ludicrous to me, you know. I just wanted to pass that information along in the event that somebody's going to have a procedure done in the near term. Expect
more invasive.
Yeah,
are the questions more invasive? Are the requirements that they ask you to put on paper, the censuses that are now coming around instead of once every how many years, they're doing it every year. The questions that they're asking are really illegal as they continue to ask more and more. We see Obamacare and the new gun registration executive orders are really going to expand and break through the HIPAA laws, which are the medical privacy laws that are shared between you and any medical care provider. Those are out the window.
Right.
But, you know, they know everything about you, know everything about your situation, and now they want to know, you know, which is a relevant question for a lot of people, because there are people who are in those relationships that they can't just come out and say, I'm being abused, or they're afraid of being killed. Is there room for that? Yes. But I think that it should be asked at a discretionary level instead of a common, every person level. Just my opinion. But
well, I think that we are losing on all ends. We're losing our freedoms for the illusion of security. We're losing our
we're losing
our privacy.
An illusion of freedoms for an illusion of security. It's all an illusion. We don't have any real security. The only security we have is the security that God grants us. But
we're
being told that we need to give up our freedoms that have already been taken away because of a few bad people in the world. And if this were the case, if this is how our country acted from its inception, we would have been slaves long before the Civil War ever happened. And I mean all of us as being slaves.
Well, that's very true. But that's why I think, too, it's our duties, you know, once again. This is what happens, by the way, when an entire generation or even multiple generations have no idea how this country was founded. They are actually victims of revisionist history. They've got no memory of the way that things used to be. And even more troubling is the fact that they don't even care. This does kind of dovetail in with the current illegal aliens in this country, and I use that term deliberately, who could become legalized by this Gang of Eight when we're talking about 20 million people, okay? What is that going to do to the composition of our founding principles? I mean, what's that going to do to what we're, you know, what's that going to do to our country? It's going to really segment society, and there's not going to be assimilation like one. Of course, back in the Johnson era, back in the 60s, with the opening of our doors, the floodgates, the first flood of this, come to America and be embraced and be part of this melting pot, of course. What are we finding? We're finding enclaves rather than assimilation. And I think that this is going to be doing much more harm than good. And plus, too, look at the – Joe, you think you mentioned this yesterday. Look at this. I mean, look at Saudi Arabia. The hostile Muslim countries are actually getting – the best of treatment, while those people who attempt to come to this country legally and through the proper steps, the friend of ours from the United Kingdom, 5-8 years on a waiting list, yet these 20 million are going to be put on the fast track to amnesty. What did she go through, all of that? I mean, where's the incentive to be legal or go through the legal process. There is none. It's crazy.
Correct.
So, man, it's just wow.
I want to play this quick clip. This is from this was a clip from a comment Obama made at his White House Correspondents' Dinner that they held over the weekend or on Friday. The clip speaks for itself. Here it is.
Yeah.
You know, what I wonder is how many people realized at the end when he did his, you know, there's always this part at the end where they get serious for a minute. And it's usually the part where presidents say, you know, I think the press has a good job to do and I understand what they have to do. He didn't say that. He wasn't very complimentary of the press. You know, we all can do better. I thought his pot shots, joke-wise, and then the serious stuff about the Internet, the rise of the Internet media and social
right.
media and all that stuff, he hates it, okay? He hates this part of the media. He really thinks that the sort of the buzzification, this isn't just about BuzzFeed or Politico and all this stuff, but he thinks that sort of coverage of political media has hurt political discourse. He hates it, and I think he was trying to make that clear.
Hates it. Hates Internet media.
Doesn't like it.
And news. I'm sorry. Internet news. Who are we talking about? We're talking about our president. And that's what he said at the Correspondents' White House Dinner this weekend. That is it's for. And Tom Brokaw spoke out against this. I was watching a clip from Meet the Press this weekend where he said it's turned into a party, a gala to see who can bring in the top actress or the biggest actress or richest person from where it used to be, a time where the press corps could get to know the administration a little bit more on a friendship level, leaving, you know, business really aside and just getting establishing a relationship. But now it's turned into, you know, all these celebrities, this partying, and a real force in the media overtaking cable news, overtaking print media, is the Internet media. And these people aren't paid by six-figure salaries by, you know, the corporations owned by the White House.
We're not.
This is a free and open media that is not afraid to tell the truth. That is not afraid to say, you guys got it wrong or you guys are lying. Well, what is his response? I hate that. Well, of course you do. And you're doing everything in your power to stop it.
Well, was Brokaw, I didn't hear Brokaw's, Tom Brokaw, I didn't hear his response. So was he against?
Brokaw.
Was he against the president, though? What's that?
Oh, yeah, he was, I'm pretty sure it was Tom Brokaw. I'm about 99% sure. I watched the movie, I saw a friend, but let me see, was it Tom Brokaw? Or I can't think of any other journalist this would be. But
it doesn't matter. I mean, the dignity that this country once had, the class, remember that the word that was bounced around, gravitas, during the Clinton administration, and then early on in the Bush administration, gravitas. We've lost the dignity, and this goes to the heart of what we've been talking about, what we talk about all the time. I mean, our sensibilities are constantly being offended by the actions of our government. Your sensibilities, listeners, our sensibilities. We, from Benghazi to this White House Correspondents' Dinner, you know, we're treated as if we are children, and we, you know, we're being lied to constantly, and then being laughed at when we dare question the very issues that are important to the safety, security, and to the survival of our country. And we, and like I said before, we have a long history of not getting straight answers. And, you know, it's people feel offended. Folks, don't you feel offended by how you're being treated by our government? You know, our sensibilities are being offended at every turn.
Well, it's come out now Obama is preparing to send lethal weaponry to the Syrian opposition as it has taken steps to assert more aggressive U.S. leadership among allies and partners seeking the ouster of President Bashar al-Assad. The officials emphasize supplying arms as one of several options under consideration and that political negotiations remain the preferred option. To that end, the administration has launched an effort to convince Russian President Putin that the possible use of chemical weapons by the Syrian government and more direct outside intervention that could provoke should lead him to reconsider his support of Assad. Even though there's been no proof, I mean, I know we're at the top of the hour break. I'll let you take us out, Dad, but where's the proof that these two people in Boston placed the backpacks that were responsible for the detonation at the Boston Marathon? That evidence is still yet to come to light. Where are the proof? Where's the proof that chemical weapons were used, aside from the word of some officials, either in Israel or here in America? And furthermore, where is the proof that it was not the rebels who used chemical weapons, if that were the case, that it was the Assad government? Where is the proof of anything done ever anymore? We don't see it, and it will not ever be given to us.
No,
unless we demand it. And it's at a level of demand that is higher than a level of demand for food stamps. It will never make waves, sadly.
Well said, by the way, Joe. When the demand for the truth exceeds the demand for entitlement, only then may we start to become the recipients of what is true. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report. This 30th day of April, the last day of April, 2013, how time flies, by the way. Tomorrow is May Day, May 1st, a very important day on the Illuminati calendar. It's the anniversary of when the Illuminati was actually started in 1776. But I do want to mention this. The last 2 hours have been brought to you courtesy of Granlund Firearms of British Columbia. Granlund Firearms of British Columbia. Folks, visit GranlundFirearms.com, GranlundFirearms.com. Do so and tell them Doug and Joe Hagman sent you. We're right back after these short messages. Stay with us.
Hi, folks. Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman and Hagman Report or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines. You just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's CanadaFreePress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Eileena Johnson-Powell. A lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at CanadaFreePress.com. Now mobile friendly. Follow on Facebook. Because without America, there is no free world.
Survival of the fittest. In any and all situations, survival is your number one priority. That requires being tough and thinking smart. And the folks at Freeze Dry Guy are going to help you do just that. They have the long-range patrol ration entrees, what they call the brick pack. When you're in survival mode, it is absolutely the best item for your survival pack or bug-out bag. You can go farther, faster, and carry more food with the LRP cold weather ration entrees. Not only do these long-lasting, durable entrees help sustain you or your family through the harshest environment or situation, they are by far the most delicious of their kind. No contest. With a variety of tasty entrees, you can't beat the LRP brick packs. Let Freeze Dry Guy help you in your survival situations. Go to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-FOOD.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no secret is revealed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number 3 of this last show on April 30th, 2013. We are moving into May full steam ahead, or full speed ahead, and tomorrow, May 1st, will they put that capstone on the top of the World Trade Center, making it officially 1,776 feet. If so, what does that mean for us? What is the symbolism there, if any?
Yeah, have you heard, and Joe, you heard anything about that? I have not. Folks, have you heard any more about
I just heard the watch for tomorrow.
I haven't seen
any other articles on, about it.
I have a feeling in my gut that they're going to do this very quickly, very casually, very, you know, unceremoniously. And it might be, I mean, I believe it'll be tomorrow. But if not, I'm not gonna say, well, gee whiz, you know, it's still not a symbol of the Illuminati. But I think tomorrow would be a darn good bet if I was a betting person. Of course, you know, all my bets I would lose anyway. But I don't know, and that gives me some bad vibes about this as well. So I don't know. 1,776 feet. They couldn't make it 1,800 feet or 1,700 feet.
Just 1,800. Yeah, cap it off at 1,800.
Right, right. It has to be 1,776. And you know, and I just wonder, too, and I've said this before, when you look at the layout of Washington, D.C., and you look at all the monuments there, the obelisk and the swearing in of Barry Satoru of facing the obelisk in this last swearing in ceremony, there's meaning behind that. And then we see this Olympus Has Fallen movie coming out on March 22nd. All of this.
Well, see, Olympus fell.
Well,
see, it doesn't say Olympus is a straw man waiting to fall. But go ahead.
No, it's interesting. When you said Olympus is a straw man, I didn't really think of it in that fashion. So that's kind of a unique perspective. And folks, what do you think about this? 661-244-9839. Anything and everything that we're talking about, 661-244-9839. Interested in your thoughts, but no, that's kind of an interesting perspective, Joe. About the straw man issue, and folks, please, visit HomelandSecurityUS.com. That's HomelandSecurityUS.com and CanadaFreePress.com. You want to know what the truth is? You want the truth. If you think you can handle the truth, CanadaFreePress.com. Judy McLeod, fantastic author, fantastic researcher, editor, and others there as well, and also HomelandSecurityUS.com. But
hey, maybe
Roman,
you can
help
find an answer to a debate in chat. The
okay.
Freedom Tower or One World Trade Center? What is the name of this new place?
No, it's One World Trade Center. That's the official. No, that's official.
What happened to the Freedom Tower? Was freedom taken away?
Well,
controversial title for the building? I don't know.
No, you know, okay. If you believe the official stories here, it was obviously the initial building, One World Trade Center. We had done a lot of business with clients in that building, but it was a 104-story skyscraper. Let me back up here. One World Trade Center, or one, the numeral one, WTC, that's the main building of this complex. You have to understand, at Ground Zero, there are a complex of buildings, and then you've got that water thing going on down there. I'm not even sure what they call that anymore. But it was originally titled the Freedom Tower. There was some discussion amongst the people within the Port Authority, and as well as the architects, and even the government chimed in. And the name was ultimately changed, as was certain aspects of the construction, to the One World Trade Center Tower. The reasoning behind it, look, I'm not sure what to say or what to make of that. The architect behind the concept of the current building, I think, had some say in this as well. But I don't know the design evolution of this and the name variations. I'm not sure what to believe, so I'm going to reserve comment on this. I'm not sure what to believe behind this. There is some stuff behind it, but go on.
Well, a little piece of information that was just passed along to me is that the Masonic Star has 6 points. The base of the tower is 200 feet. 200 divided by 6 is 3.3333, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know how far those threes go, but yeah, 33.33. Is that a coincidence? I don't know. Is 1776 a coincidence for the height? I don't know. Look at the Egyptian pyramids and their math that is done for the width and height.
That always interested me very much. And I remember, too, in the days of Richard, in the days of when we listened to Coast to Coast or Art Bell at the time, and Richard Hoagland was on and others were on talking, Graham Hancock, for example, talking about the pyramids and about the construction and about the architecture, the angles and the placement, and even their distance from Jerusalem and just a whole bevy of things. And I've got documents printed out from 1995 and 1996 when the internet first came, really was being used, from the Art Bell site, from the old Art Bell site, the original one, about this numerology and about the sacred geometry of these buildings, and even to the point where it carried through to the buildings we see in D.C. and some in New York and such. So it's pretty interesting as we look at that. But that always interested me. That's I don't believe that these are merely coincidental factors. I believe that they're telegraphing. I believe they're both functional and telegraphing a message to the Illuminati or the Illuminists or the Luciferians or the people behind the power brokers. That's what I believe. So, but weigh in. You know, feel free to weigh in, 661-244-9839. Preference to first-time callers. If you are a first-time listener, we will give you preference if that is possible. We don't screen calls. We take everyone, and we try to let you speak your piece as well. But Joey, go ahead. What else do we have on our plate? What's that? Oh, are you laughing at?
That's just me.
Okay.
I was just messing around. I was going to start messing with callers, starting to screen them, and no, just kidding. But we do have callers on hold. We should go to them right away.
All right, let's do that.
We're going to start at 618. 618 area code, we're coming to you first. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi, how's it going? My name's Jason, and I just want to say God bless everybody. I happen to be over this week, and I saw a movie with Tom Cruise. It was that movie Oblivion. And when I was sitting there watching that movie, and I know you guys talk about different signs and different things like that, but just something kind of caught my attention was right in that movie, and it's not going to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but they were sitting inside the Super Bowl, and one of the places, large Super Bowl areas where they would play. And anyway, in the background it said 2017. And then they described later on, I think that was the last Super Bowl, right when, you know, I guess like big atomic bomb or something like that, when that happened. But that just happened to catch my attention and everything in terms of signs. I didn't know if you guys saw that movie or had any.
Joe, did you see it? I did not.
No, I haven't been to a theater in a while.
And I don't think, caller, I don't think we're going to have any spoilers here. So I'm not afraid to say this, that the main alien spaceship, this, I think, what was it, Tetrad? I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So okay. It represents the pyramid of control, the Illuminati power structure, by the way, centered in Rome. And throughout the film, that pyramid spaceship thing is shown upside down to the way one would ordinarily see a pyramid. And, of course, this is much like the satanic turning of the cross of religion upside down to disrespect it. So is the inversion of the pyramid showing disrespect to the Illuminati power structure. InfoWars had done a special on this back on April 24th. And that was their take on it. You know, it's rather interesting, but isn't it interesting, caller, how we see things playing out in Hollywood that, you know, it's just...
Yep.
It's,
oh, yes. Well, wow. You know, I can tell you is pretty much what my gut feeling was. And you know, and I just couldn't, I was describing with my son everything. He's 10 years old. And I just kind of said, I was talking to him this morning, like, almost made him late for school. It's just kind of weird that in the Bible that the Sadducees, what was it, the Pharisees, and those are the people that were just those that were, that should have been able to recognize the different signs when the Messiah came, when Jesus came, and those were the exact opposite people that did not they didn't recognize them. And so it's just, I kind of recognize to myself and everything nowadays that why doesn't people recognize different signs and the peoples in the church, or don't they see the things that are going on? And you know what? There's a lot of people. I just kind of relate that to the Bible and everything, and at least that respect that, you know, people don't see the things. There's a lot of Christians out there that just don't open their eyes and just say, hey, you know, we're on the brink of, you know, a war with Iran or Syria and North Korea, and their dollar is about ready to collapse, and they just don't see these different things that are happening and everything. And these are all kind of things that, you know, it's kind of a way that it's actually proof and everything. It just shows a very directly out, hey, these are very certain blatant out signs that are going to happen and everything in terms of, you know, before Jesus comes back. And I just it always bewilders me that nobody ever recognizes any, you know, a lot of people don't recognize these signs. And when you bring it up to your, like, your family members, listen, I'm going to tell you something. They go as far as this, and this is how I'm not trying to judge them, but they'll say they believe in Jesus. They say that they're Christians. But I'm going to tell you something. If I went to Christmas or so or a family function, and I went up to, let's say, my brother's kids or something like that, and I said, hey, you know, did you know Jesus loves you? Nothing religious, like denominational, but I know that they would be sitting over in the corner going, why is he talking about Jesus? You know, it's Easter time. Why is he talking about Jesus to my kids? And you know what? That's how I recognize. I mean, there's a lot of people out there say that they're Christians, but if you mention anything about, hey, this is what it says in the Bible, any more than that, they dismiss it 100%.
Hey,
I don't know if you can.
Joe will tell you they'll call the children's services on you if you dare say, hey, Jesus loves you, you know. And Joe, I'm sure you've got your opinion on that, but yeah. I mean, you can't be saying that, caller. Oh, don't you dare say that.
Well, I just want to put one message out, and it's just a message of hope in terms of this. You were talking about I was fishing today, and I happened to was playing your last night's broadcast, and you were talking about pretty much, you know, even if you save one, even if you were not saved, I can't save nobody, but even if you were able to talk to one person, and that person could do it, might change the world, 10,000 people, you don't know. Well, I just want to let Obama or any of the other politicians or any of the people in the world, you don't have my children, because I'm going to tell you something. We all sit there and pray before we get in the car, and, you know, before we leave the house in the morning time, the kids sit there and pray before they eat, but we pray before we sit there and, you know, that's what you need to do with your children. But I'm going to tell you something. You lost with my children in terms of everybody else. Jesus has my children right there. So I just wanted to say, at least on a positive note, they don't have everybody. You know, I make sure that my children know that Jesus loves them, and I stress that very much to them every day.
Good job, man.
And,
good job. Wow.
I just had a couple other, just one little quick points and everything, if I could say that really quick.
Sure.
Okay. Let's see here. Well, just remember that in terms of, and I always relate this to, a lot of people, I guess, somehow believe that the devil's down, you know, Satan's down in some pit or something like that, and always think back exactly, which is, you have to know, this is the reason why you have to at least crack open your Bible, so at least you'll know kind of what it says, because I always relate it back to Job, you know, Satan went up to Jesus, and he said, you know, where did you come from? And he said, walking back to and fro on the earth. So he's not down in some pit. He's not doing that. He said, when people wonder why evil things that are happening around in this world and abortions and things, just all the horrible things, he's walking back and forth on the earth. So I think a lot of Christians get that confused. They think he's down in some pit or something like that, and, you know, and I don't know what they believe, but he's walking back and forth to and fro on the earth. This, at least the spirit of him.
Very well said. Very well
and then,
said.
Yeah.
And then one more quick thing on a timeline. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
I won't even go with the other point I was going to make, but I just wanted to tell you at least something that happened this past weekend, and I'll just see what your take is on this. I work at my job. I work with three people, me, a partner, and another guy. And I was explaining to the one guy, you know, I wasn't trying to get religious on him or anything. I was just saying, hey, you know, just make sure whatever you – you know, choose, if you want to believe in a rock, that's fine. But make sure that is exactly, you know, you just want to make sure you're making that decision very clearly and very, you know, very clearly. Sit down and pray about it. If you believe in a rock, it's not going to hurt you. You know, just make sure that you're making a very clear decision about what you believe. Because, like I said, there's no second chances. And I was just kind of talking about God in that respect. The other gentleman there, I guess I can call him gentleman, came down. He overheard that I was referring about God or something like that. He went back up to his desk, came back down, had a book, said, hey, read this chapter in here real quick. And I read a couple, about a page or so, and I went back up to him. I said, listen, you know, I'm kind of busy right now, but what's the book about? He said, just read some more. So I went back down there. I looked on the back of the book. Well, I'm not going to, Just to be nice, let's just say it was the most horrific type of book that you could ever imagine of what it was about. And it was an interview or so like that with a guy who was interviewing 600 guys that had did something with a woman or something like that. And so it was so horrible that I was just, but my point is what would make that guy go up to, if he knows that I'm down there talking about God, something unusual got a hold of somebody in a certain way and everything, and just kind of what would make someone, you know, you wouldn't even show that to, you know, I guess if I was down there looking at something bad, but I mean something, if you knew I was talking about God, some sort of spirit, that's just not normal. You wouldn't go up to someone and say, hey, read this horrible book. And it's, I just, if I can get your, that's the type of things when I look at it, you know, I just always refers me back to Job, the spirit of, you know, the devil's just walking back and to and fro on the earth. And that's where you come up with that stuff.
I was, yep. Familiar spirits.
Yes, it is. But I don't want to hog up any more time there, I think. But I just wanted to run a couple of those points to you, and just say God bless. And it's just refreshing to at least, you know, I kind of feel like, what do you call it, Lot? You know, when you turn on the news and you're walking around and you hear people, oh well, supporting abortion or supporting this or supporting, you know, this gay marriage or this or that. And I don't hate anybody. I'm just for life. And I think that, you know, but what does it say in the Bible? Wrong will be right, and right will be wrong. And that's just what Amen. I see every day. So just keep doing what you're doing, and, you know, please just keep telling the truth. And I just appreciate you always uplifting Jesus' name every chance. That's always very refreshing to hear that. And you don't hear it from too many places in this world nowadays.
No, you don't. Yeah, wow. And as sadly, you demonstrated. Oh. Yeah.
So thank you very much, and I'll just let you go and everything. Have a good night.
God bless.
God bless.
God bless you, and thanks for the call. Great call it was. And we always have great callers. We, you know, we have such a tremendous audience.
Can you imagine, though, him, you know, what he had done and his actions of, you know, saying, just believe, and then being handed a certain book to read that was offensive. I mean, what's going on?
I don't know
there?
About you, but I've had weird experiences, not the same as that, but weird experiences where you are doing something for the Lord, you are praying, you are focused in the Word or another way that you and the Lord are communicating, and something very odd or strange, or even it won't seem strange at the moment, but then you'll reflect back on it. And I'll give you an example. One time I was praying and I was listening to this. It was on the radio in the car on the way home from visiting my grandma when she was in the nursing home, coming back to the house. And it was talking about prayer and how the devil will try to interrupt your prayer at any cost.
Very much.
And I was at home afterward, then I was praying, and the cat that my grandma just bought came up and started chewing on my chain that I had on. And it stopped me from praying. I had to look up and see what was going on. And it was a cat, you know, yanking on it. Something the cat never did. I shooed it away, went back to praying. But I thought about it later that day. I'm thinking, you know, is that something so subtle to interrupt my train of thought, my prayer? And it can be something that's so.
And I got to say this, I believe this with my heart as well. I'm not sure I'm going to articulate this properly, but folks, listeners, do you find it becoming increasingly more difficult to pray? Okay, not that you can't find the time or the place, but it's almost as if when you begin to pray or you're in prayer, you're mentally barraged by thoughts. It's almost as if kind of like an imaginary cat inside your brain, kind of just I didn't explain that right, but you know what I mean, the distraction, the mental distraction.
Yeah. But you start to pray, you get a phone call, you start to pray and ideas start popping in your head, or you start to pray and it makes you think of something, a good point maybe, an article you're writing, and you switch from praying to going back to that article. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
it happens in many ways.
It's a different environment today, I believe, and And it's something that I think we should be aware of, just because we just be aware of it, and we need to fight against those distractions and keep on point, really. And it's so, a lot of times, you know, especially too, it's kind of like being, and I can relate to this, it's if you sit down at your desk, and I know a lot of our listeners, many of our listeners have health problems. They've got bad knees, bad backs, bad, you know, whatever, you name it. It's difficult to concentrate when you're in pain. And that's kind of the way it is when you pray. There's this element of, and it's not pain necessarily, but there's this element of distraction that pulls you away from your intended purpose. And I think it's just becoming more and more prevalent. So I think that that's reflective of the spiritual battle that's going on, as well as the battle here on earth.
Yeah, and I want to say this. You know, some people are different walks with their relationship with the Lord, whether it be, you know, they're far along in their walk, in their journey. They know who the Lord is, and they've been walking with the Lord for a while. Some are learning still to learn how to communicate with the Lord. Some are still angry with the Lord. Some are still introducing themselves to the Lord. But no matter what situation in our lives that have happened to us, we can always look back on that. At least I can, and see how the Lord has used it for good in my life, or has used it to get me where I am today in my life.
Right.
And we need to remember that even though we might be going through hard times, we might be having a family member who is giving us real big problems, or vice versa, we're giving a family member big problems, or things are happening. They're not, when we're in that moment, when we're in that situation, it's always hard. It's always difficult. But once you're removed from that, it's easier to see how God was working in your life for the better. So what I guess I'm trying to say is, don't be discouraged by little things, by arguments, by setbacks in your life, because that is going to happen. We have to stay focused and always look forward and look ahead when we're dealing with the Lord.
Exactly. And very well said, by the way. Thank you for saying that. Very well said. By the way, I just want to address an email I got. TJ writes, Doug, you forgot to mention about May 1st, the Keystone Cap will be put up for the New World Trade Center. TJ, I'm not sure if you can send me verification of that. I have not seen verification of that. We talked about May 1st being that day. And that's how we got into talking about the 1st of May. So, but thank you, TJ, for the email that you sent. But so
let's go back to the phones.
All right.
719, we're coming to you next. You are live on the Hagman and Hagman Report. Thanks for holding.
Hi, Doug and Joe. Last night was a great show. Sunday, wonderful show with Pastor Langford and Steve.
It was great, yeah.
Oh, it was really great. Oh, I was just praying. And anyway, I wanted to comment. Yesterday, Joe, when you talked about the children that were dying, how many children were dying, and how they could put up these drone things, I guess, really fast. And my question was, where was Angelina Jolie? You know, she's supposed to be the spokesperson for, you know, the United Nations. Where was she? You know, she's there for other things, but I didn't see her there doing anything about that. Other than that, I really, if you guys could ever do a show on, I'm very confused. I've been reading my Bible on the Romans 13, you know, at what point as Christians do we stand up? And like you were saying, draw that line in the sand, you know. I did it with my mother. We were on the phone. She got mad at me because she says, I'm tired of you not calling me a Christian. And I said, Mom, I'm reading the Bible. It says you cannot, you know, you're not supposed to go to mediums and those types of people. So, and I'm going to say this. I don't know if you're allowed to say it on the radio. You can't read Shirley MacLaine books and be a Christian. That's in the Bible.
I
go back and read your Bible. You can't have it. You can't have one foot with Shirley MacLaine and believe her, and then one foot and believe Jesus Christ. You've got to pick one. And that's kind of my issue with my family.
You know what? If you've got to move the Bible off of your coffee table to make room for your Ouija board, then you've got a problem. Okay. So you're right. You're correct. You cannot read, or maybe even a better.
What
term.
It is
go ahead.
It is people put more respect to other people. They give more glory to other people than they do the Lord. And this is why it's a problem, because if the Lord was exalted as he's supposed to be and put number one in everyone's life, this wouldn't be an issue. But we glorify men more than we glorify the Lord.
Yeah, this new age devil, I call it serpent language stuff that's coming out. But I found something I wanted to read. And I'm reading, I'm not from King James, it's paraphrased in my little daily bread. But I thought it was great from last night, because you were really upset, Doug, which rightly so you should be when I heard what I heard. The Lord has made all for himself, yes, even the wicked, for the day of judgment. Everyone proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though they join forces, none will be unpunished. So the Lord tells us that those that do that will be punished. So I don't know. I had to read that because I thought maybe it would help you a little bit. Because I was really excited about, you know, your, you know, verver, because I feel that way sometimes. I look around. I'm looking at these people that are on MTV. These so-called, Mark Dice does great jobs on that, by the way. But they're openly doing these videos, these MTV videos, or each, I don't know which show. I don't watch that stuff, but you know, one new one. She comes up in a hearse. She's doing this. Got this satanic star doing this. You know, openly disgusting stuff. You've got that one, I don't know, the guy that did the first Live Aid, his daughter openly now reading Aleister Crowley and all of her little girls. And these young girls, I can't believe how young these girls are that are following these, you know, Beyonce, see all these people that are, you know, doing this sort of, I don't know, I think they're letting devils into them and then doing these stuff, and this is what's permeating our youth. And having said that, you know, sometimes the ones that are, like you were saying about the kids being in trouble, well, my younger son's in a little bit of trouble right now. He's more open to listening to me about the Lord than my older son, who's being prideful and won't listen. So kind of a dip, you know, it's that whole family thing. But again, I need clarification. I've been praying about it and reading it. Where do we draw the line in Romans 13? Are we allowed to protect ourselves? Where do we draw the line? And, you know, why aren't there...
Sorry,
I'm babbling. I'll let it go. You can answer off air. I just...
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'll address this off air. Thank you for your call.
So I wanted other people to call in, but I just wanted to get that out.
Okay. If I can just say,
we'll answer your question, and thank you, Donna, for the call. You have a good night.
Oh, you're welcome. You too. Bye.
Bye.
You know, Joe, you and I have had talks about this. If I can just say one thing, and this came to me, I mean, once again, a good friend of mine, a man I respect, I know, I mean, I know his history. I know that he's a man of God, and he... His one saying is, we have the government that we worked for, earn, and deserve. And that, now having said that, however, it's our job until the time when our Savior comes back to do whatever we can to fight the principalities of evil, and you know, not succumb, not roll over to government persecution, or not just take it. We've got to fight, because there are blessings. And I believe, Joe, and I'm not even sure where, what scriptures, but we are, and I think Pastor Langford might have touched on this on Sunday, that after every battle that we go through, we are rewarded, spiritually rewarded, for being victorious or surviving through that battle. So it's, we cannot, and Romans 13 is being perverted by our government and by the Department of Homeland Security to make us believe that we should just subjugate ourselves to the will of the government, which is totally opposite of what I believe God has intended for us.
God is the creator. He created us. We are his creation. The temple is us, our body.
Yes.
The Lord in the new covenant dwells with us. It is his, not the state's. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Well, the money, whose face is on the money, our presidents. So we can render that to the Lord, or to the...
Well, isn't that kind
of... when it comes to...
the way we opened the show, too, with the half shekel and the money changers, and I mean, this kind of circles back around to that, but go on.
Right. We are... we cannot just turn over our family members because the government says so. I believe we have the duty to fight for our, not only our family members, but innocent people. And we are to lay down our lives for those people, as it says. You know, those who are last are first, but those who are first are last. And not just saying, you know, those who, especially when dealing with such a serious matter like our lives, if you are running to save yourself instead of helping other people first, you're in trouble. But as far as Romans 13 goes, that specific verse in the Bible, it's been a long time since I went through studies and opinions and back and forth of that. But we belong to the Lord, not to Caesar. The Caesar can take everything else, but he can't take our souls.
Okay.
And we cannot give them to him.
Right.
They can take our body. They can take our lives if they want. And there's not a lot we can do about it, really. I mean, we can try and fight. And should we? Yeah. Especially if it involves our family, our children, innocent people. But the ultimate, taking our souls, they can never touch. Not even if they want to, no matter how bad they want to. That's on us.
You know, you've got to put some, in my view, you've got to put some spiritual thought into this. Because with what you just said, I mean, that question that Donna asked, or that issue that she brought up, I don't think, I mean, I think that question alone, or the scripture passage, Romans 13, I really believe this will be used as you know, to facilitate.
It already is being used.
Right.
Look at the Katrina clergy response teams. You know, the biggest verse that helps us is Romans 13 when dealing with the people. And then they say go to the camps and we'll sort it out later. Well, no, we won't sort it out later. We'll sort it out now. You know, if you want to take my body, that's fine. But you can't have my soul. And I'm not saying lay down, because we're called to overcome. We need to be overcomers. Who else can spread the gospel when, you know, they are killing all and everything and anybody who understands what the Lord's word is? We're called to survive. We're not called to bow our heads down and walk into the FEMA camps. Now, if we are caught and we are put to death, we're told that we know to be quiet because the Lord will put into our mouths what we need to say at that time. But until then, we need to overcome.
Well said. And you know, I'm pondering on that. As well as I think everyone should ponder on that too. But because my goodness, Joe, I mean, the spiritual aspect of what we're seeing today is, in my view, almost overtaking If it's definitely guiding, but it's almost overtaking the earthly realm. Think back on Election Day, for example, the day after. How many people have you talked to that said, "My goodness, I've felt this weight, this heaviness, this trouble, you know, this whatever, however it was described." And I believe this is part of it. I guess is what I'm trying to say is that what I just described is actually increasing and it factors into the battle here, the earthly battle, the practical battle that we're fighting. And that might not have made too much sense, but you know where I was going with that, probably. You know what I'm trying to say. I think that these go hand in hand.
Yes, they do.
Wow.
We got some people on hold. We're going to go back to the phones here. 804, we're coming to you next. You're live on the Hagelin Hagelin Report.
804, we're coming to you next. You're live on the Hagelin Hagelin Report.
That deja vu.
Howdy.
There.
Is that me?
Hi.
That's you.
Hi, Doug and Joe. I got something for you on this Romans 13.
Sure.
Remember in the book of Acts when the Sanhedrin, the council, the highest religious authority in all of Israel, told the apostles they forbid them to preach in the name of Jesus. But they did. They still kept on preaching in the name of Jesus. And then it says in chapter 5, verses 27 to 29, and when they brought them, they set them before the council. And the high priest, now remember, the high priest, that's their highest authority. The high priest asked them, saying, "Did we not straitly command you that ye should not teach in this name? And behold, ye have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine and intend to bring this man's blood upon us." Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, "We ought to obey God rather than men." So I think the bottom line is we can obey the government as long as it does not command us to do something that is opposed to what God has commanded us.
Well,
God's words come first.
But wait,
we pay taxes on the board. Jesus said that we can pay taxes. When they asked him about paying taxes, give to Caesar what's Caesar's. The money was Caesar's. It has Caesar's name on it. We can pay taxes. I am horribly distressed by abortion. But I can pay taxes in good conscience because Jesus said, "Give to Caesar what Caesar's." That's Caesar's problem, what he does with it. I have no control over that. But I can't, you know, if you're in Nazi Germany, you don't turn in the local Jews to the Gestapo. You don't tell them where they live. You don't cooperate when they try to pervert your children, sexually pervert your children, or get them to worship Emperor Obama. You see what I mean?
I do.
And Joe? It's the same thing with other authorities, like a husband. A wife is supposed to be subject to her husband, but I knew a woman whose husband, after she was married, he became a Satanist. Well, she grabbed her kids and got out of there, and that was the right thing to do.
Mm.
You know, because she couldn't be submitted to him once he was a Satanist.
No, of course not.
And it put her children in danger. So the highest authority is always God's word. Same thing with parents and children. Children honor their parents, but you can't always obey them. If the parents tell you to do things that are immoral, illegal, my principle with my husband was I would do what he wanted as long as it was not illegal, immoral, against God's word, or, you know, harmful. Other than that, yes, absolutely. So that's our bottom line. We have to obey God rather than men.
Mm-hmm.
But when we can reasonably obey men, we do it. Now,
sure.
If they come for your guns, I don't know how you work that one out.
Yeah, that was my question too. At what point?
You have a duty to provide for your family, and you have a duty to protect your family. And I think that's one where we have to pray, and we've got to hear from God for ourselves. We can't depend on experts. We've discovered the experts are just, there are so many heretical pastors out there, for instance. In my city, there's a Baptist pastor who denies the atonement. He denies that Jesus died for our sins. Well, he's not even a Christian, let alone a valid pastor, let alone a Baptist.
Wow.
But this kind of thing is widespread now. It's just, Jesus said there would be a tremendous amount of deception and apostasy before his return, and we're seeing it everywhere. So we have to read the Bible for ourselves. We've got to pray for ourselves, and we've got to ask God to give us understanding of the Bible. And we have to ask the Holy Spirit, you know, to call things to remembrance, to enable us to understand it. Just pray. Matter of fact,
that's right.
I knew a mentally retarded boy who was trying to learn to read, and he wanted to read the Bible. And he'd see these words, he couldn't understand them, and he'd ask Jesus what this meant, and God would show him. So God was basically teaching this boy how to read.
The best source for our information.
He had a childlike faith. And here's an interesting thing about this boy. He came from a family that was horribly morally corrupt. But because he was retarded, they despised him and didn't try to corrupt him. They didn't bother with him. Well, then he had a job as a janitor, you know, just doing simple things. And a friend of mine who worked in that office really liked this young man and took him into his home as a roommate. And then all at once this young man bloomed and started learning to read and became very articulate. And, I mean, it was wonderful. He used to go to prayer meetings with me all the time. He's a great guy. But his simple faith, when he got a word he couldn't understand, God, what is this? Help me. I can't read this.
And that's how easy it really is.
Yeah.
If you are connected, if you have the faith, and you know the Lord will take care of you and will answer your questions.
He had that childlike faith.
Yeah, it's mostly us getting in the way of ourselves and in the way of the Holy Spirit from working. It is the human element that we so often run into problems with.
Right. So if we wind up in a practical situation where we don't know what to do, we ask God. Please show me.
But let me say this, okay? The caller before talking about Romans 13, this first came out. And if I recall correctly, it was a KSLA news report back in 2007 that had to do with the clergy response teams that were being trained by the federal government. And
right off the bat, they're in trouble. If clergy are being trained by the government, they're already in trouble. And anybody that's willing to do that, you've got a problem with.
Well, the according to various sources, including KSLA, the first directive for the pastors was to preach to their congregation Romans 13 from FEMA and from DHS.
I'm sure, and you know the Nazis use that all the time.
Right, to hoodwink Christians and the supporting.
Right, they'd say, doesn't that book of yours tell you that you have to obey those in authority? They didn't know anything
right,
else
like
in the Bible, but
faith.
That one thing they knew.
Hmm. Yep.
But,
obey God institute governments and obey the governments.
Right. Now, what we need to do is have a working knowledge of Scripture, especially New Testament, so that if people try to use one verse out of context, then we can see where it really belongs. Because if we're biblically illiterate, then we're very vulnerable to being manipulated like that.
Mm.
Like, that's where that do not judge thing comes from. Yeah, Jesus also said you can tell them by their fruit. We're supposed to be fruit inspectors. And he also told us, for instance, protect your children. So say you know somebody who's a nice homosexual. Well, and maybe he's had us one partner all his life, and he's not one of these guys that bounces around all over the place, and he's not wild and impulsive. He's very disciplined, okay? Actually, in my family, we knew somebody like that, an incredible musician. Okay, and I think he got corrupted when he got sent to Europe to study with a man and lived over there. But anyway, when he was a young teenager. But, okay. In so many ways, he's a great guy. However, you do not want this man to babysit your children. We've got
True.
To use common sense. We've got to use good judgment. God expects us to. When he said don't judge, he means don't act like you're judge, jury, and executioner. This is a horrible person. This is trash. We're in no position to say that. Jesus died for them. We don't know their hearts. We don't know what they've been through or what they're coming out of or whatever. We can't do that. But we do have to judge in practical terms. We sure can pray for them. But we need to be... If a guy used to be a thief, I shouldn't leave money lying around. And if he used to be an alcoholic, I shouldn't have alcohol lying around. You know, don't tempt him. We've got to use sense.
Yeah, very true. But the whole issue with Romans 13, you know, I just see this as coming into play. It's going to set the precedent for gun confiscations at a time of martial law. You know, whether it's a real or manufactured emergency, I can see pastors coming out working for Homeland Security. And saying,
if we've got pastors that are already backing gay marriage, homosexual marriage, how can we expect them to stand up on this? There are some individuals who stand up, and they're going to pay a price for it. They know that they could pay a heavy price for that. But most men don't have the courage these days. For a lot of people, pastor is a career instead of a calling. It used to be it was a calling, and people fought it because they knew what it would cost them, and then they would finally surrender to God and do it. Now they go after it because it's a good job, a good career with good benefits. It's a totally opposite, wrong approach. Now, Pastor Langford, he's got the right attitude. Precious man. But those guys are few and far between.
Yeah, very true. Wow. Well, I just fear for the Christians who will follow blindly the premise. Let's just, you know, cooperate, be compliant until the emergency or whatever the situation's over, and then we'll settle our differences once the crisis is done. I see that being
well,
the
yeah, and
key.
That's what Hitler did, and he kept creating more and more crisis, right?
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
So it was never done.
Yeah, yeah, but I see this outreach as the previous caller said, but. And the discussion, the actual legitimate discussion, which I don't believe we should have about Romans 13, in subjugating ourselves to the government under that scripture. But
look at the Confessing Church and Dietrich Bonhoeffer. They were required to take an oath of allegiance to Hitler, and he said, we can't do that. And a lot of those men went to prison and died because of it, but they refused.
Very true.
We've got to do that. And Bonhoeffer was a man who certainly knew Romans 13, but he knew the rest of Scripture too. Mm. Hitler wants to be our conscience. Only God can do that. We cannot submit to him like that. God comes first.
Well said.
Amen.
Wow.
Well, God bless you guys. I'm grateful to God that you're out there. You're such a blessing for all of us. Thank you so much for everything you do.
Well, thank you, and God bless
thank you.
Thank you. And we'll talk
soon. We are equally blessed to have you out there, Marianne, and so many others who always call, who always send emails, who first time send emails. We get the most inspirational messages. We have the best listening audience any person could ask for, and that is the Lord's doing, not ours, just like the Lord's doing for the show, and it is not ours. On a final note here before we end the program, U.S. Mint sells a record 4 million silver eagles in April, breaking the previous monthly record by 41%. This is very hush-hush, apparently. U.S. Mint updated silver eagle sales totals Monday evening for the first time in a week, and now they're reporting a massive 3,975,500 American Silver Eagle sold with one day remaining in the month, an all-time sales record for April.
Mm.
The previous record of 2.8 million set in 2011 was broken by 41% and is on pace to sell nearly 55 million eagles in 2013. We all suspect that the U.S. Mint has been meeting demand through April rather than rationing supplies. The sales total might be closer to $10 million and would have set a new monthly record. But either way, keep your eyes on silver.
Yeah.
The demand for real silver continues to rise.
And if I can say this for those who, you know, are preparing on a budget, go to your local coin store and simply buy a bag of junk silver, okay? It's affordable. You know, you can buy small quantities because as I was reading about what happened in Argentina during the societal breakdown, you know, you might not want to go to a black market or gray market type thing with a shiny silver round in your pocket. Rather, you might want to have some junk silver if things do get that bad, and I suspect that they will. So that's just a little tip. And also, one last thing, because there are so many such a demand for silver, there is an increase in counterfeiting. There's a YouTube video out there to how to tell the difference between a counterfeit silver round versus a real one. It's one of the ways you can do it very simply is by the sound. A counterfeit one will have a very high pitch or a higher sound than a higher ding. You know, when you ding it. Yes, sir.
We are out of time.
No.
I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. Tomorrow, Nathan Liao will be our guest from 8 o'clock until 11 p.m. Eastern time, normal time. Do not miss the show. We will be promoting it, and hope to see you all there tomorrow. Until then, God bless each and every one of you. Have a great night.
Good night.